As the protests continue erupting in communist-controlled Cuba, the communists have finally had enough, and they have reportedly opened fire on what is described as a peaceful protest, actually killing somebody. There's a bunch of other very disturbing witness accounts, and there's a bit of hearsay. In one story, a man claims that his friend was calling him saying the police are rounding people up. They're secretly arresting people. They're beating people in the streets. And you know what? I gotta say, I believe it. You know why? The Cubans shut down the internet so people couldn't spread the word. They arrested a journalist live on air while this journalist was giving an interview to a Spanish news anchor. If the people of Cuba really believed in their revolution, certainly the social media they would put out would be dramatically in favor of what was going on with the Cuban government. So why would they need to silence the people of Cuba unless it turns out the information coming out was desperate pleas for help as the police brutally cracked down on anybody who opposes their authoritarian regime? Well, we got that. We've got threats from Russia and China and Iran over U.S. potential actions in Cuba. Of course, you heard we talked about it last night. I believe we talked about it. The mayor of Miami saying we should potentially have airstrikes in Cuba. Mm-hmm. Man, this is escalating rather quickly. And then you've got South Africa. Massive food shortages are only getting worse because of the widespread rioting across the country. I think the death toll may be over 100 at this point. I'm not entirely sure. There's another interesting article, though. MIT. Somebody predicted in 1972 that by 2040, the economy, the system, society would collapse. And now they're saying we're on track for that. So add that to the list. We've got the fourth turning. We've got Thucydides Trap. And now we got some MIT report. Okay, the apocalypse is happening. Well, we'll talk all about it. Joining us today is, of course, Jack Posobiec.
Welcome, welcome, everyone. We're here for the fourth turning. We are going to document it in full. We're going to talk about the axis of the elites between the CCP, the 1% of China, and the 1% of the U.S. forming a global overstate.
Listening to what Biden was saying earlier today, I don't know if he said it today, actually. He said it the other day, I think. He said it's not just the vote. What do you say? The votes don't matter anymore. It's who counts mm-hmm. the vote or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
That's what he said.
But it was basically saw that video? What that quote yeah. that Stalin was accredited with.
Yeah.
Well, I saw the one where he was saying, you know, we've counted and recounted. There's never been an election that was scrutinized more highly than this. And I'm like, do you not remember the year 2000, Joe? Because I remember you going around for years afterwards saying, Al Gore won the election. He said this. And I remember hanging chads. I remember the, you know, having the magnifying glass up. Did they fill out this bubble? Did they fill out that bubble? Well, perhaps they actually meant to fill out the bubble in between the
hanging
bubbles.
Chads.
Yeah. So, you know, like, no. We've had a very highly scrutinized election in the past, Joe.
I just want to add something, you know, because a lot of people were like, for the past several years when I would mention Civil War, they'd be like, Tim, you're so dumb. Why are you bringing it up? Joe Biden is now repeatedly referring to the right as akin to Confederates, saying over and over again, we face the biggest challenge to our democracy since the Civil War. That's no joke. How many times has he said that now? Like several times?
So this is something that I've picked up. This is a rhetorical device that is not being used by accident by not just Joe Biden, but really his entire White House and the entire administration there. There is a reason that they keep referring to Civil War. There is a reason they keep referring to their political opponents as the Confederates, who are essentially traitors, right? Traitors to the Republic, traitors to the Union in the time. There is a very direct goal that they are seeking, not only in the immediate term, right, in terms of the basic political win, but also they are in search of a crackdown. They right. are in search of, they have a solution, and they are just waiting for the problem to manifest itself.
That's right. They know they're hanging on to power by a thread, so they need an excuse for physical force, intelligence agencies, everyone to just shut it down and seize full control. But we'll get into all this. We got Ian chilling.
Yeah. That January 6th thing, I feel like their response was a little extreme. Mm. And they're still responding to it.
They occupied Washington, D.C. for months.
Yeah.
I was there. I couldn't park my car.
Yeah.
That's creepy stuff that's going on, man.
Crazy.
Like, our Capitol was occupied by military forces, and we don't even talk about it. It was earlier this year. Right? We didn't even talk about it.
They only just took the fences down.
Right.
They wanted crew-served gun emplacements. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
right.
They actually wanted that, and I believe it was Pelosi who was saying yep. that, was saying, do we need crew-served guns up there just in case of what? Right. There was never any intelligence, and they would have them up there. And a few Republicans every once in a while, when Chris Ray would come up, and they would say, do you have any intel? Can you tell us what the threats are? Can you tell us what's going on? Now, interestingly enough, on April 2nd, there actually was a terrorist attack at the U.S. Capitol. However, it was conducted by a guy who was not a follower of, you know, QAnon or MAGA. No, it was a guy who was actually a follower of the Nation of Islam, Louis Farrakhan. And by the way, he actually murdered a Capitol Police officer, the only Capitol Police officer to be murdered in the line of duty since the 1990s.
What was the date? Do you remember?
I believe it was April 2nd, 4-2. So 4-2. I'm calling it the 4-2.
Yeah, we got to call it 4-2 for
now. That's my birthday.
Yeah.
4-2, baby.
All right, all right.
I was down the street. I was actually down the street when it happened.
We'll get into all that. We got Lydia present.
Is your birthday?
I'm here in the corner. Yes, it is Ian's birthday.
Happy birthday.
Ian. Sorry.
Thanks, Lydia.
That's a bit of a downer, but yeah.
Before we get started, everybody, go to timcast.com, become a member. We're going to have a members-only segment coming up after the show. Usually goes around 11 or so, but if it goes late, it goes late, you know, because we want to make sure we're getting you the best of the best at content. But good news, it looks like our soft date right now is for a Monday launch of the new site, which you've probably seen. We've actually got some of the alpha articles already. You're going to see them tonight if you're watching on YouTube, and they look absolutely incredible. There's more to come. Your support at timcast.com means we're taking over the media, baby. We're going to be hiring more and more journalists. We're going to be hiring fact checkers. I'm going to be creating a fact checking division. I've long talked about our plans for what we're doing with fact checking, and it's all coming. So again, timcast.com, become a member. But don't forget, like this video, subscribe to this channel, hit that notification bell. All apparently that it does nothing, but hey, you know, do it anyway, and share the content. Share this video, share this show, share it with word of mouth through links, whatever you got to do, and do it for all of the other shows you really like as well, all the other creators. That's how we overcome the censorship, unless or until they ban us. So sure, whatever. But let's jump into this first story, talking about communist Cuba. This is where it's getting dark, man. Daily Mail reports, quote, the communists have lost control. First Cuban demonstrator is killed after police, quote, open fire on peaceful protest, while anti-government reporter is arrested live on TV as unrest continues. Diubis Lorencio Tejeda, 36, died Monday in a suburb of Havana during a clash between protesters and police. Witnesses claim security forces had responded to demonstrators with gunfire after they threw rocks. Social media activist Dina Stars was arrested live on TV by Cuban security forces on Tuesday. Cuban government launched crackdown on protest after large-scale demonstrations erupted on Sunday. Seems to be getting worse, man. I don't know. You seem to know a lot about communists, though, Jack. What's happening in Cuba?
Yeah, so, you know, funny enough, is I always joke about this. So I spent almost a year, right, in Cuba when I was at Guantanamo. But because when I was there under the Obama administration, we didn't have a status force agreement. We still don't have a status force agreement between the U.S. and Cuba in terms of that. So we were not allowed actually out into the island, right? So we used to have these T-shirts that we would sell on base that said, you're here in Cuba, close but no cigar. Hey.
Oh.
Clever.
And so I've always kind of wanted to actually visit the rest of the island, but I got really into just how Cuba works when I was there studying it because, needless to say, let's just say that, you know, while I was there for the detainee operations, we also had people who were there from an intel side that were not paying attention to them. They were paying attention to the broader, you know, Cuba, the landscape there, the military, the politics. And of course, we actually had some communication with them, we would say, across the fence, just in terms of, hey, if there's, you know, because it's very arid there on that part of Cuba, really? Because of the mountains. So, you know, wildfires was a big issue, just like in California. So that's something obviously would affect both sides. So it just makes sense to kind of have a monthly meeting where we sit down and talk.
Yeah.
And you would. So what you're seeing now basically is, look, the Castros are essentially over, right? Raul Castro has, you know, he's on his last legs. He's kind of cut ties.
Like, he abdicated the throne.
Right. He's gone. He's gone. And so they know that that the new leadership, who, by the way, who is still on Twitter, verified and able to tweet.
Yep.
Right. Throughout everything you just said, cracking down on protesters,
killing them,
arresting journalists in the middle of the street. He is allowed to tweet, but Donald Trump, of course, is banned.
Who is it? This is a Cuban leader, you're saying? The leader of Cuba
right
now?
What's his name?
Who is it? What's his, you know his name?
I forgot his name, man.
Let's find out. The man of the hour. You said a status of force agreement, Jack. Is that something that the government will officially do with another government when they are going to have military that is going to be out and about?
right, the country. Right. So, right. So you need some kind of legal, you need essentially a legal purpose for being there. So, you look at a country where the U.S. has overseas bases, on a more normal, with a country where we have more normalized relations. So talk about South Korea, Germany, Japan. Those are kind of like the three big ones. Also, UK, we have some people there and on a few bases. And so you would have an essential agreement where, okay, we are not immigrating. We don't need visas, right? We don't need, any specific, documentation other than the orders, right? And that's all covered under that status of forces agreement. So, you know, of course, and, you know, the sort of cynical view of that is like, this is U.S. imperialism, right? Why does the U.S. need these, all of these bases around the world? Why are they providing this blanket of international security? This is the way that Russia would describe it. This is the way that China certainly describes it, especially when it comes to East Asia and that sphere. But this is, that's the basic idea, that status of force agreement. And you'll also see this in terms of like, you know, if you're going over somewhere for a, you know, an exercise, like we do exercises with tons of militaries. And so the idea, or tons of countries around the world, Thailand, Australia, et cetera. And so the idea is that you wouldn't necessarily need a visa to go because you're going on orders, going on mission.
Is it the end of the world? we got China warplanes in Taiwan. We got South Africa's collapsing. You got the revolt in Cuba. Haiti. Then you've got in the U.S.
Haiti
as well. I mean, the dude gets assassinated.
It's like we actually kind of drove past that. It's like, you know, it's funny. Right? The president of Haiti is assassinated, and everyone just kind of says, you know, it's Haiti.
Well, what happened was the president of Haiti gets assassinated, and everyone's like, whoa, what's happening? And then all of a sudden everyone turns because South Africa lights up, Cuba lights up. So look, man, fourth turning. It might not be a world war. What if it's a global economic collapse?
Oh, speaking of Miguel Diaz-Canel, by the way.
I pulled him up. Yeah.
I have a BlackRock right here. I got you a BlackRock as well.
What you're seeing now is, by the way, this is a reformation of the global order, right? This is a reformation because, for a variety of reasons, America, which, as I delineated before, which had maintained that system, and you can see the military power, but also the economic power and the cultural power of the United States, all of those have become diminished over the past decade and really over the past couple of years. Now, in the Trump years, you know, there was this sort of like sudden resurgence. People are saying, hey, is the U.S. going to go back to that position? But then that, you know, that was basically usurped by Biden. And so that path seems to be closed. And now people are realizing they are going back into what the status quo pro ante was prior to Trump, and the phrase, I'm going to say it and you'll all remember it. This was managed decline, right? We were told this again and again throughout the Obama years. The U.S. is headed toward a managed decline. And we were told, they used all these technocratic phrases to sort of explain, well, this is just the way, you know, things are going, and countries, you know, they rise and they fall. And this is normal. And, you know, I believe in American exceptionalism the same way Greeks believe in Greek exceptionalism, et cetera, et cetera. That was the famous quote from Barack Obama. So this is the idea. And I want people to understand that this is being done by policy. This is being done by decisions, right? Human decisions, human agency that's made on behalf of the people in power that have made this decision. They've made the decision to outsource, right, U.S. jobs, which is outsourcing our manufacturing base, which is outsourcing our wealth, all of the secondary and tertiary industries and businesses and communities that would have thrived off of that. I was actually just up in Maine. We went up for the 4th of July, and you know, it's great because you can go on the coast and there's all these sort of like old money cities and old money like beach towns, and you go 30 minutes away and it's all this post-industrial, just bleak societies where, you know, former factory towns with the factories gone, and the workers, the families of the workers are all still there wondering, hey, what do we do now, right? We're still here and, you know, we'd like to stay in our towns, but we're just stuck.
That's the interesting thing about policy. You can be an industrialist, you can run a factory, and through no fault of your own, the government decides they're going to put pressure on your business that forces it to leave the country. So, of course, it still comes down to the conscious decisions of a lot of these, you know, people who run these companies. But when they say something like, we're going to increase the minimum wage, we're going to increase the corporate tax, then we're going to do a free trade agreement for factories outside, it's impossible to compete. Let's say you make, Ian, you gave me this little, was it obsidian?
That is obsidian, is volcanic glass.
This is obsidian?
Yeah.
Wow. That's that. And how do they file it to this?
They polish it.
Let's say, Ian, you have an obsidian factory, and you make these fancy little obsidian
now
stones.
Now we're talking. All right.
And you operate in,
Hawaii.
New Jersey.
Oh, Jersey. Okay.
New Jersey. And then they announced
volcanic New Jersey.
Yeah.
Well, they import all the volcanic rocks. You know?
Naturally.
So they announced they're going to be raising the minimum wage, raising the corporate taxes, and at the same time, free trade agreements with manufacturing from China.
That's too much for my company
to handle. And you say, you know what? My workers deserve $15 an hour.
Well, I do
believe
that.
So I gladly accept the cost increase, and I should pay my fair share in taxes. All right, so you go over the numbers and you say to pay everyone $15 an hour and to pay a 20% tax, we're going to have to charge $5 for every beautiful obsidian stone. No problem, right? Then all of a sudden you go to Walmart and there's China stone for $3. And you say there's literally no way we can make the obsidian stones for $3. Well, China has slaves,
wow,
and they can import these products for free with no charge. So your company goes out of business because it's impossible to compete with the free, the slave labor that China uses.
And understand, right, this was the idea. This was actually the plan all the way back before when, and funny enough, right, prior to Occupy Wall Street, what was the big, you know, I talk about Antifa a lot, I wrote the whole book about Antifa. What was the big sort of Antifa moment, right? It was the Battle of Seattle, 1999.
WTO.
And the WTO, and it was all about who getting into the WTO. It was all about China getting into the WTO over slave labor. And that was Antifa, right, protesting against China and violently, violently rioting against China getting into WTO.
Those were Gen Xers. So a big thing at play here is Gen X was protesting at the battle in Seattle in 99.
And they were flying Tibetan flags.
That was second wave Antifa.
Then, exactly. I wouldn't call them Antifa. They were anti-free trade. Like it was more classically liberal in a lot of ways, but they were leftists. And then 10 years goes by and you get a little bit more than 10 years, 12 years, you get Occupy Wall Street. What's that? Millennials with some Gen Xers who were at the WTO, but many of those Gen Xers, the WTO moved on, had families, got jobs, and they're gone. Now the millennials come in. It's been 10 years since Occupy Wall Street. 10 years, isn't that crazy? It'll be 10 years in 2 months. September 17th, 2011.
Zuccotti Park.
That was nice.
Now it's Gen Z. People who are 10 years old during Occupy who have no idea what it was about are now in their 20s, entering their 20s, and they're voting for people, and they know nothing about the Obama administration.
That's why I talk about the Federal Reserve like a chicken with my head cut off on this show, because we got to teach these people about what is at least part of the root cause of social disorder right now. And I think it's the privatization of our monetary supply.
Bro, look. Jack talks about the plan, the WTO in 99.
Again,
right?
this all goes back to it, man.
So it's as I explained, how you think that Joe Biden doesn't know what he's doing. He's called for those three things specifically. We're going to raise the minimum wage and we're going to increase corporate tax so they pay their fair share, and then free trade agreements. And you wonder why all those things come together. It's to make sure you can't run your business. Now, here's the thing. These people who were 10 years old during Occupy Wall Street weren't even alive during the battle in Seattle, during the WTO stuff.
Right. They don't know any of this.
Now all they know is they're growing up and the system is broken and the government should give them free stuff. And when you try to explain to them, dude, it's Biden. He's been doing this for 50 years. They go, shut up, fascist.
Did you see that they're going to be giving families $300 per kid?
Yes.
Until they're 18 years old.
Child tax credit.
This is how we afford this.
We can't.
So they're just going to print more money.
Bro, have you seen the consumer price index? What was the percentage it's at? It's like 5 point something. It's going up.
Right.
Gas is up 45%.
It's insane.
Biden inflation. We're going to, it's, you know, they call it, what do they call it? Massive monetary theory.
And modern monetary theory.
Modern monetary theory, but it's not modern monetary theory anymore. Now it's modern monetary practice, right? It's, we can spend forever. We can spend indefinitely. We can, and when you hear the Fed say, oh, we're adding to our balance sheet. We're adding to the Fed balance sheet, right? Right. Well, that means you are taking on debt, which means when you're taking on the debt, you're issuing what? You're issuing loans to banks at the highest level, right? The reason that they are doing this is because they want all of you. They want millennials. They want Gen Z to become a renter class. Right.
You will own nothing.
You will live in the pod. You will eat the bugs. Right. you will own nothing and you'll be happy. Right. That doesn't mean that no one owns everything. Right. Someone is going to own something. And that someone, as we're finding out now, is going to be Wall Street. That's going to be BlackRock. It's going to be Blackstone. It's going to be these massive companies that are coming in now and purchasing what? Real estate. So your landlord, right? We know how much Antifa loves
corporatism.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So you have corporatism where these corporations from Wall Street are now controlling the land. They're controlling your real estate. If you want to go out And so, and this is the amazing part of it, because rent's just going to go up. And so who's paying for those loans? The renter is. You are. You are going to be a Russian serf.
Look how brilliant the whole college plan was. Everybody must go to college. Two things happened when they went to college. They took on massive debt they can't pay back and they can't declare bankruptcy on. And they got indoctrinated with psychotic, you know, cult BS. They told everybody to take it on. At the very least, if they don't indoctrinate you, they make you an indentured servant. Yeah. Now they're buying up all the houses. So if you want to live somewhere, they're going to say, but you got to pay us rent. Hey, we're a private company. If you want to live in my house, you got to pay the rent. And then when you give them problems, they'll say, we're raising your rent. Oh, no. And you get kicked out. It is.
And so where are you going to go? How are you going to, how are you going to have any type of wealth formation? If you don't have wealth formation, how are you going to support a family? God forbid. And if you do somehow manage to be able to get married, to have a couple of kids, how are you even going to be able to generate enough wealth to pass something on to them? So you create into something the left, I used to talk about all the time, generational wealth, right?
Dude,
you're not going to be able to do that with the negative interest rates the way they are now. This is all done by design. And the manufacturing, where does it go? It goes to Asia. Why? Because they don't have our labor laws. You have slaves, essentially slave labor in China, in Xinjiang with the Uyghurs that are building all of this stuff, so they don't have to worry about them. They're not getting the wealth. The wealth is going into the 1% of China, and who is that? That's the CCP. And this is gets back to my earlier point before, when we talked about the Battle of Seattle, when people were talking about putting and this was Clinton, right? This was Clinton putting China into the WTO, and then later Bush 41 talked about this. Of course, the response to Tiananmen Square, he said, well, we just need to bring China into the global order. That was what was said again and again and again. People were saying Tiananmen Square, they're crushing students the same way that people are being crushed, the protesters in Cuba right now. Bring them into the global order. Bring them into the global order. And they'll become more open. They'll become more socially liberal. They'll become more transparent. No, it was the exact opposite that happened.
But we became
more authoritarian.
But I think we were always more authoritarian. I think you just can't do it instantly. So look at what's happening now with what Joe Biden's saying about Civil War stuff. I mean, the way he's describing people on 1-6, the insurrectionists, the Confederates never breached our capital. Come on, man. And then you hear what he talks about, the FBI saying snitch on your neighbors. You we're hearing that
Joe Biden wouldn't have to. So there's that refrain, too, that I believe people will say that, you know, if the situation were hopeless, the propaganda would be unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden's not going to Philadelphia, not going to, you know, where I'm from, and giving a massive speech standing across. Now, the Constitution Center is down across Independence Mall from the actual site of the signing of the Declaration and the Constitution. He's not going to give a speech like that from a position of strength. That was done from a position of weakness. That's because the contradictions are accelerating too fast right now. The Hegelian dialectic, which the left used to move forward, they used to progress with, is happening too fast, and not enough people are able to keep up with it. That's why they realize that their critical mass is falling apart.
You mentioned on Twitter that I don't know how much you've confirmed this or not, but that there was a plan to put together a list of extremists the insurrectionists followed on social media. Can you tell us about, like, what is that all about?
So the reporting that I've got on that so far, it comes from a high-level White House official who's sending me this stuff and is saying that it's actually being driven by three people right now: Chris Wray, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer. And Ron Klain in the White House is going along with it. Jill Biden is going along with it. And for the time being, Joe Biden is going along with it. I haven't actually been able to confirm whether or not Kamala is for or against this. But what it is they're going through the Jan 6 defendants, and they're trying to cross-reference everybody from that in terms of their social media and come up with kind of like a top 10 or a top. I haven't been able to confirm how many it is or how far it's going, but find who the top people they were following on social media was, and then those people. And I said, well, what is it? Are you going for the actual people who are saying storm the Capitol or commit some act of violence? No. They're going for the people who were trying to just say, hey, show up on January 6th because the president is going to give a speech on the South Lawn at the Oval. It's going to, at the Ellipse.
They're specifically putting lots of people who said, come to D.C.
Come to D.C.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if you promoted that event, which, of course, was a speech from the president of the United States, right? This was not the thing that happened afterwards. Then you are essentially going to be put on this thing. And then this is going to be said now and go with the report in Bloomberg. Right. Bloomberg is saying that Mike Lindell, of all people, because he had that comment about August and everything, mm-hmm. that they're saying, we're now tracking to see whether or not people commit violence. This is the FBI in Bloomberg saying, we need to be careful about August because we think that there will be extremist attacks because Mike Lindell, who sells pillows, right, is talking about August, and so August might be a key date for the extremists.
I got to tell you, man, there's a lot of people who want to show optimism. You know, we got Steve Bannon and Michael Malice, who have both said they've been very optimistic. But what we're watching, I mean, it tracks very similarly to the rise of any authoritarian regime of the past several hundred years. And it doesn't look like we're gonna walk out of this one. It looks like we're gonna be underneath the boot on this one.
So the question always comes down to that critical mass, right? Will there be some kind of conflict? Probably. Hopefully that it will be a political conflict in terms of it's done through words, it's done through elections, and we can steer clear of anything beyond that. That being said, though, I do think there's a reason that Joe Biden keeps talking about civil war. Again, there is not a day that goes by that you do not hear someone from the White House saying the phrase civil war or making some kind of reference to it. I go back all the way through.
Well, why? From they, 9 they to want January it to happen 20th. Or what?
I believe they're trying to call their punch. I believe they're trying to call their punch.
What do you mean call their punch?
They want, this is what I was saying before, they want to be in a position where they can crack down. They want to be in a position where they have some kind of inciting event, right? You know, in narrative fiction, they
shot talk her about around the
inciting
the world.
Event, right? They want to shot her around the world. They want something terrible like this. And you can go, by the way.
So they can stop Trump. They can stop the midterms. They can stop 2024.
And beyond that, they want to stop the populist movement. They want to shut, like, ever since the internet really kind of came out, and then internet 2.0 with the rise of social media came out, it became a very big problem for the people who used to be able to just control the narrative, right? None of this could have happened in the 90s, by the way. And so for the, you know, the Gen Z types out there who are watching this saying, oh, well, I don't remember any of that, Battle Seattle, etc. In the 90s, there were like 5 TV channels and a couple of newspapers. And if you wanted to control the narrative, it was very easy. That's why, you know, I think for a lot of people who are younger, Iraq WMDs, that was kind of like the last, you know, the last sort of time where it worked, where just a lot of people said, well, you know, if the government says there's WMDs in Iraq, I mean, I guess we gotta.
But everybody was saying them. It.
Everybody's saying it. There's no, right? Because those other voice, I mean, you might be able to find like, you know, a certain AM radio host, who was around at the time, who would probably be speaking out against that, but that was probably it, right? There was no other form of mass media. We don't even use that phrase anymore, by the way, mass media, because everybody through social media has the capacity to be mass media. Think about that. That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Everybody, all you need is this, and you can be mass media.
You know, we do that new vlog. We do a lot of, we use a lot of our phones to film it. People probably don't realize we have good cameras and then we just use phones.
I always say the greatest journalist of 2016 was Zdeněk Garza, the guy who was a firefighter on his day off on 9/11, who decided to go to the memorial and then got that video of Hillary passing out when everybody in the world said that it wasn't happening. But what did he do? He had the wherewithal and he had the mental preparedness to say, I'm going to turn my camera, I'm going to film this, and then, right, and this is the spark of just history. This is the spark of the turn of history. I'm going to upload it to my Twitter account, and then somehow, and he only had a couple thousand followers, but it was enough that it generated more and more, and then it became, I really do think that was the day she lost the election.
You're saying that they want to call their punch, and think about everything Biden's been doing. It's not just saying civil war over and over again. It's that, you know, the FBI comes out and says, you're in a position, catch the extremists and your family and your friends. You've got the FBI saying white supremacists are the biggest threat. They're saying these things over and over and over again, even though it's not backed up by any real data or any real news, because you repeat the lie enough, people start to believe it's true. But they're planting the seeds.
Right. And then so you can see this in the documents that are coming out from DOJ and all this. They've got people in Facebook chat rooms. They've got people in Telegrams. They've got informants all over the place. It just came out. BuzzFeed, of all people, BuzzFeed just said that the Michigan plot had 12 FBI informants involved.
Out of what, 17 people?
Right. Right. 12 FBI informants.
So here's what happens. A year from
now.
That's
BuzzFeed. That's not like, you know.
A year from now, something happens and they'll be like, see, we told you.
Yeah, right. Like a year goes by and they're just waiting like any one day and these 365.
It's actually, such a small, you know, I'll put it this way. Do you remember the Simpsons episode where Homer, it turns out he hasn't paid his taxes, so they ask him to go undercover on his friends?
Yeah.
And right. then, so they put a wire on him, yeah. and it's like this huge box under his shirt, and he's walking around Moe's, and he says, so, you guys committing any crimes right now? and they're like, Homer, do you mean like the time that you were trying to counterfeit money? And
yeah.
Moe's like, no, I mean like stuff that involves you,
and then they give more examples.
Yeah, and I think Mo has like a killer whale in the back room or something, and all these Japanese guys, and he's like, get rid of it, get out of here, guys, get out of here.
Right? That's what the Democrats are doing,
right? So that's I mean, it, and I laugh, but that's kind of what's going on right now.
You know,
is that you have a solution in search of a problem. By the way, this is something that I saw in the intelligence community when I was in there. That as the war on terror was wound down, you had all of these, you know, they would say capacities, right? You had all of these teams, you had all of these special operations forces, you had all of these super high powered intelligence programs, collection programs, all designed to what? Protect America from terrorism, right? But as the war on terror is winding down, you have all of these toys, right? And yet you don't have any authority to use them anywhere. So you have to say, well, and you have all these people who have joined saying, hey, I need to defend the country. I've been told we have all this Gucci hardware, these Gucci programs. I've gone to this training. I've gone to that training. What do you mean I can't go kick down some doors? What do you mean I can't go after somebody? I've got to go after someone. There's got to be somebody out there, right? When you are a hammer, you view everyone as a nail, right? And so you have a supply and demand problem when it came to what? Terrorism. And now they are trying to turn that on its head and say the biggest terrorism threat is not overseas anymore. It's right here behind every blade of grass.
But I think that has a lot to do with the midterms and with Donald Trump running again. They will by any means necessary stop Republicans and Trump from winning.
That's a lot of collateral damage.
Yep.
You think that they would do that?
Right now they are hanging on to power by a hair. They have the Senate only by the tiebreaker vote, and they have what, 11 votes in the House, I think.
So it's close, yeah.
It's close. So 2022 comes up. I mean, look, we saw Republicans win safe Democrat districts in 2020. This could be the Republicans taking back the House. And as I've said, the Republicans, they won't, but they should immediately impeach Joe Biden for all of the, like, if they could impeach Trump over a phone call with Ukraine, we got way more than that about Joe Biden with Ukraine and Mexico and all the other garbage he did with his son, Hunter. But the Republicans get that House. They can start filing subpoenas. They can do what the Democrats did. Now, the Democrats aren't going to let that happen. Not to mention the Republicans probably wouldn't do it anyway because they're really, really weak. But the Democrats don't want to lose
kind
power.
Of, that all depends on which Republicans end up winning these primaries. That's why
true.
The primary fight is so big right now is, and you look at some of these states, not only in the House races, but in the Senate races, where, because Republicans know, they have a very good chance of taking back the Senate. That's why you've got stuff that's heating up in Missouri, in Arizona, in Ohio. These are all places where people either look at it as a potential Republican pickup or you've got a Republican that's leaving. Wisconsin may or may not with Portman. We're not sure. I know he said that he's not going to run again, but actually, I don't know if I'm like breaking news here, but he may actually run for re-election in Wisconsin. But, and you've got strong candidates, right? You know, and people are, I'm constantly getting people to say, hey, Jack, you should take a side with this guy and take a side with that guy. And I said, look, I think there's a lot of strong candidates. And I think I hear a lot of people saying the right things, just like you're saying, that you've got younger Republicans now who are stepping up saying, look, I don't want to just win to say that I won the race. I want to be in charge in the Texas governor's primary. That's why Abbott is facing some of this stuff, because they're saying, and Abbott, I actually not a Texan, but I never thought of Abbott as some kind of rhino. But now you've got people going up against him saying, how come you didn't pass an election law a decade ago? How come you didn't pass this law back then?
If in the midterms enough right populists win and displace neocon and establishment Republicans, then they might actually start doing stuff. Imagine if every seat taken is by a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Lauren Boebert or a Matt Gaetz.
Right. So this
then
is something. This is something where, you know, I've got to give credit where credit's due. You look at the DSA, the Democrat Socialists of America, and the way the squad kind of rose up out of the DSA and rose up out of their sort of talking points. it's almost like what they did is they created kind of like how Major League Baseball has their the minor leagues, right? It's sort of like a farm team where people can compete, people can move up their way up, up in the ranks, and then as they get up into Congress, they then are beholden to all of that stuff that they had to go through when they came up through the DSA. Well, the right doesn't have anything like that. The right has no organizations like that whatsoever. That may be changing, but from this point on, it's just more like, it's kind of more of a free-for-all. But I do see that as a potential model for people on the right or for just people who are populist in general to say, look, we are going to have our own organizations that are maybe have a tenuous affiliation with, you know, one side or the other. But what they really serve to do is to credential people, is to bring them up through the ranks, is to give, you know, kind of like put them through the ringer, you know, here and there. And then when it comes to actually running, we are going to say, okay, I know who this person is because I knew them from, you know, all those years.
So let's go back to, you know, what the Democrats are doing, or the Biden administration specifically, targeting people with this terrorism. I think it's because that's the point. If enough strong Republicans, young, energetic, and populist Republicans get in, they're going to have tremendous power in the House that could be very, very disruptive to the very flimsy amount of power the Democrats are, you know, or flimsy thread they're holding on by. So how do you stop it? Well, you continually say that the Republicans are insurrectionists. They're the problem. They support Trump. This proves it. And they try and do everything in their power to use the government to go after those who might actually upset their power. They want to solidify their power and control. They need one more Senate seat to actually firmly have the Senate. So they're going to demonize in every possible way. And there's a lot of people I know, and you guys probably know people like this, who are just really dumb, don't care about politics. Hear it in the background on CNN, believe it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yes.
And they vote.
It is sad to me. So you think that the Democrats are going at this politically, like if we can suppress this insurrection, then we'll stay in office and retain power. But that there's also like a global organization that wants to buy your stuff so that it can rent it back to you, that's using this opportunity?
Well, there's international interests, certainly, who want to own things and make money off it. I think of it more like a fire, you know, or rot. It's not like there's one guy who's twirling his mustache going, yeah, like Klaus Schwab. Everyone assumes he's, you know, he's influential for sure. And a lot of these wealthy people, George Soros, are influential, but it's applied pressure. Enough powerful people want a similar thing, and they're applying pressure in a similar direction. And so the fires of that elitism keep burning. So if you have, it's like if you have 10 people in a country and they're all wealthy industrialists and 7 of them are communists, well, they're going to keep funding communists, not together as a conspiracy, just because 7 of them are communists. Eventually then the people who have food and money and are reproducing are communists. And then the 3 who support the capitalists or the free market, free enterprise people, they don't have as much success. So then the culture becomes dominated by communism.
It's part of the problem of doing nothing. They say if good men do nothing, that's like worse than evil itself. It's because when you do nothing, then kids are born and they're raised in an environment where psychosis is the norm, like occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan. And so they think it's okay. Like they're twisted. These, no offense if you were born after the year 2000, but if you didn't see what happened on 9/11 and if you didn't read the evidence about that in the years afterwards and the weapons of mass destruction and watch the slow lies. Decline into occupation that the United States has become, it was terrifying. It was it was revolting, and it still is.
Let's talk about where we're at externally, right? So it's not just the Democrats are terrible with domestic policy. Let me show you the story we got right here from Newsweek. Russia, China, Iran warn U.S. must not intervene in Cuba. That's right. Don't you dare, United States, intervene in Cuba because Russia and China and Iran have said so.
Because Russia would never intervene in Cuba.
Oh, for sure.
There's
sure.
No history of that.
Remember when the U.S. surrendered to Iran? About 2 years ago, some small ships were forced to surrender to Iranian gunships.
Yeah, I was in the Navy the day that happened, and seeing that image of my fellow sailors in the same uniform that I was in the Pacific when that happened. They were in the Gulf, and we were serving in similar communities. Put it that way. So I was like 1 degree moved from some of those guys. And at that time, you know, we were still at on edge with North Korea. We're certainly always on edge with China. It would not have taken much to see people I knew or, you know, various missions to you know, kind of see myself in that position and thinking that, you know, that image, right, of American sailors on their knees with their hands behind their head.
To Iran, of all countries.
To Iran, and to not have a Secretary of State and a president who are immediately getting on television or picking up the phone and saying...
Well, this was Trump. Like,
No. That was Obama. That was Obama.
2019 was when we had the surrender.
When... Which surrender are you talking about?
I'm pretty sure it was 2 years ago.
I'm talking about the one in 2016.
What happened in that one that you're talking about?
2016, that was the one where they were held for a couple of days in the Gulf. And they actually were on their knees, hands behind their heads.
And is the one where you were in the Mediterranean, Tim?
Oh, no, you were right. You're right. 2016.
Yeah, that was okay. January 16.
You're right. Wow.
What was the story, by the way? Were they sailing too close out of international waters? They went to Iranian waters?
So there is an island called Farsi Island that's essentially in the middle of the Gulf, which the Gulf is split right now, right? So there's international waters, but then when you get into what a country is called in their economic exclusion zone, that would essentially be considered Iranian waters. However, this island, which is in the middle, is an Iranian island. So they have sovereignty over that. So there is an EEZ around that island as well. And their ship, I believe in the official report it came out, they actually ran out of fuel because the junior officer on there didn't actually calculate the fuel that they would need for the journey. They were going from the northern Gulf all the way down to Bahrain. And they didn't compute it correctly, et cetera, right? It's supposed to be the swing. And then you go around the island, run out of fuel, drift into the waters, get picked up. They say, hey, you're invading our waters. And they say, oh, excuse me, this is just, you know, it's a big mistake. It's a huge understanding. Nope, this is a U.S. invasion. But you look at the response. Now, this is why when you said it was Trump, I said, no. If this was, imagine Trump on Twitter, right? If the IRGC, if the Iranian Revolutionary Guard had picked up some of our sailors and had even considered getting close, right? This is Trump, by the way, who actually did just straight up murk an Iranian general, like the leader of their force, the Quds force, which is like it's kind of like their SEAL Team 6 in many ways. But far beyond that because they're terrorists as well. Obama. I mean, we're so sorry. We're so sorry.
What do you think the response from this administration has been following these threats from, you know, communists? I mean, Iran, you know, Russia and China, sure. But what did Jen Psaki say? She refused. Jen Psaki refuses to admit communism is the reason behind Cuba's freedom protests. And Joe Biden, others in his administration said it was about COVID. They won't actually confront the issue. They won't actually speak to the public honestly about what's going on in Cuba.
So this is actually,
they're scared.
This is actually a situation where, you know, Biden, who, you know, I'll give him some advice. I don't think he'll take it. But if he wanted to be smart, this is a chance where you could stand up for U.S. leadership for the hemisphere. This is Monroe Doctrine. This is the Caribbean, right? This is nowhere near China. This is nowhere near Russia. This is our backyard. You don't tell us what we're going to do here. Right. That's not how this works. Right. You could have that. And that, by the way, that used to be U.S. policy going back Democrats, Republicans. That was not a partisan issue. That was we are going to pay attention to what's going on in our backyard because it is in our national strategic interest to do so. Right. Because that actually matters. That's why Guantanamo Bay is our oldest overseas institution, our overseas military installation that we have since 1898. Right, I've actually walked those trails where the Rough Riders went in, a lot of that base. You know, you can actually see, you know, kind of walk through the battles that took place during the Spanish-American War. It's kind of amazing just to be able to walk in those footsteps. But, you know, for him to not just stand up for being the leader of the United States and act like a great power, right, it really goes to show you that how much that, you know, it's almost like the, you know, Biden's personal decline almost parallels the way that he's putting America on the path to decline.
You know, here's the analogy I use. It's like the dad who gets bossed around at work and is feeble. So he goes home angry and beats his wife because she can't do anything about it. Right. Mm. Not strong enough to stand up to those who are actually causing us problems. The Biden administration has a really easy time of condemning its own citizens. The 75 million people voted for Trump. They're the bad guys. But Russia, China, and Iran, oh, better, you know,
Right. Right. If you were walking around the wrong place of the Capitol at the wrong time, and, you know, I say this as somebody who was physically there on Constitution Avenue watching as this all took place, right? You know, I knew, and I said this on air on One American News at the time, I said, there are going to be people showing up a quarter of the way back or a third of the way back there. I have no idea. They're just going to walk up and see an open door and say, oh, I guess this is open. I guess they're, or someone's holding the door open.
Cops are holding it open.
I guess I can just walk in, right? You can be held without charge. You can be held, and by the way, held for peacefully, and it's essentially trespassing. What are we doing, right? Right. None of the rhetoric actually matches in many cases with the charges that are going on. But you can be held without bail, which is a complete gross violation of the Constitution. You can be fired from work. You can have your personal funds and your bank, you're debanked. All that stuff's going on. Entire family in Texas was just arrested. And I was looking through the charges. There's not even including a minor member of the family was arrested. No violent acts whatsoever. So that's Joe Biden when it comes to his own citizens, right? His own constituents. And so we have a really interesting situation right now where it almost feels like he doesn't treat those people as if they are citizens of the United States and he is their president, right? It's almost like he kind of thinks, well, those guys are Trump supporters, so I can treat them differently than I would treat a regular U.S. citizen who's all of us.
This is what people need to understand in this country. Joe Biden has not been speaking to you this entire time. That's what's really fascinating. You get these conservatives who are like, oh, I can't believe Joe Biden said that. It's crazy. It's like, bro, he's not talking to you.
Not talking to you.
When Joe Biden came out and was like, we might need another lockdown in this country. Texas and Florida had already reopened. He wasn't talking to you, red states. When he comes out and says all these things, he is not talking to you. He's talking about you. They don't like you. They hate you. And Republicans, conservatives, disaffected liberals, political homeless, IDW, whatever you are, you better recognize that they look at themselves as the correct, the mainstream, the appropriate, and anyone who deviates from that group is an outside other extremist. So you could be, I mean, this is really what cults and authoritarianism is made of.
I have a great example of this. Yeah. It's not Biden. This is why what makes it so perfect. It was Lina Wen, who is that?
Lina
Wen. Wen Lina, Jiu Shi Dana. And she's a CNN. I think she just put her on as a medical analyst, right? She's actually the former president of Planned Parenthood. Yeah. They never mentioned that, right? Yeah. But she has this comment, and it's so illustrative of this mentality, and it's so perfectly defines what you're talking about, because she says, you know, we need to make life harder for the unvaccinated. We need to make there be penalties for them going through this. We need to, and I'm not even talking about necessarily focusing on her vaccine comments, but, and which of course a lot of people have talked about, they've gone over and again, but when she says we, who is she talking about? When she says we need to do this, I said, you're not a member of government. You're not elected to anything. You're a CNN contributor, and yet you're acting as if you have state-like power over. And that is why I use this term that I've started to put it into the colloquial parlance, and I've introduced it. I call it the overstate, right? And this it sort of combines this idea of the sovereignty of the U.S. government, right, and state governments, but also the connection with the media, with academia, with social media, et cetera, Silicon Valley, Wall Street, this idea that there is. So when she's saying we, like, who's she talking about?
The party.
Right, the party, right, exactly.
Party members.
Anyone right. That will allow themselves party. To be brainwashed in the moment.
Right. Who is we?
The American Shadow Communist Party, we'll call it that.
We is a very powerful word, and that is a cult-building mechanism.
Yeah. And I noticed that nobody is bringing up the fact that she just keeps using it over and over. We need to do this. We need to set these in place.
You know,
we need to have these.
When
why are you saying we? Right. And it's also otherizing because it's we versus you. Right. It's us versus them.
When I see the things that Joe Biden is posting, let me see if I can pull up something specific. There's a video I tweeted. Here we go. Biden said, actually, I'm going to play it. I'm just going to play the video. Is it not working? We can't. Oh, I muted it. That's the problem. Mm. I'm like, why is there no sound coming out? Oh, yeah. I turned the sound off.
We do that? A little technology around here.
Here we go. You ready?
It's no longer just about who gets to vote or making it easier for eligible voters to vote. It's about who gets to count the vote. Who gets to count whether or not your vote counted at all. It's about.
So that's only 16 seconds. I don't know the full context, but assuming that is close enough to the context. You know, he's talking about voting laws in Georgia.
The new laws, right.
The new laws. This country is already in divorce. I mean, seriously. When that woman on CNN says, we need to do X, she's not calling you we. She's not referring to you, the people who are watching the show. She's saying, you're outside this. When Joe Biden says it's no longer about who gets to vote, it's about who gets to count the vote or something to that effect.
Yeah.
He's basically saying it doesn't matter.
What is he talking about? Where's the context of that?
They're claiming the Republicans are trying to strip away the right to vote when in actuality it's the Democrats who are doing it. Oh,
okay.
And so he's saying it's not just about, paraphrasing.
Well, I got to say,
it's who gets to count it, because he's arguing that the Republicans will count it incorrectly.
Can I just say, though, I got to say this, I got to be clear. We're going to do a little fact checking around here.
Thank you, Jack.
As I was driving up here, and, you know, we're not going to dox, but we are in a somewhat rural area, I did not see a single FedEx Kinko's on my entire drive here. And Kamala Harris,
yeah.
I got to say, I think she's right on this one. No Kinko's, even though they went out of business 15 years ago. Not a single Kinko's did I see.
She actually said Kinko's.
She actually said Kinko's.
Out of business for 15 years.
Yeah, well, they were, it's FedEx.
Oh, FedEx.
Yeah, so FedEx bought them out. But even still, like, Kinko's. She said Kinko's. That's like, Kitty City.
We've had a lot of people talk about peaceful divorce in this country. And I'm not a fan because I don't want to see China take over. Like, we need American unity, American culture. We need to have a strong comeback. But a lot of people have said,
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How many presidents do we have right now?
How many
presidents of the United States do we have right now?
I don't know what you mean by that. Like, obviously, we have one. We have Joe Biden.
Right. We have Joe Biden. But do you think that there are people who, at this point, just see him so illegitimate that they just don't view him as the president? And they would view someone else.
This is not Biden or Trump. This is 2016, when people said, Trump is not my president.
Right.
That's exactly where it started. Schism where there were
and
tens
Russia.
Of millions.
And you can go, by the way, Joe Biden, you have the clip he said there, but there was another clip where he said, you know, that's not how we do things in America. You win, you lose, and then you go on. You don't keep whining about it. And then I'm like, Joe, I'd take 2 seconds and run a Twitter search on his own account. And he says, the 2016 election was interfered with by Russia. They've undermined our democracy. Yep. Right.
Pelosi said it.
Right. But it's right. In your own words, you said essentially that Donald Trump didn't win because of Russia. So you were saying he was an illegitimate president just months ago.
When Joe Biden, Democrat pundits, CNN begin referring to themselves as we, which excludes you.
Yep.
You need to recognize what that means is happening in this country. Already, it is very obvious that there are two clearly distinct groups. One currently has the power of federal law enforcement, and they are using it to crush dissidents. Like little old ladies. There's that video where the cop opens the door for the little old lady, arrested, charged. Some of these people in solitary. Antifa, free to go. It's very obvious where we're at right now. When Joe Biden comes out and he says, like, they're basically saying repeatedly, we, not us. And the we is a reference to Democrats and the party members and not anybody who opposes them or any Americans. He is not a president for this country. He is a president for a faction.
You can use the word we for everybody. Like, I think we need decentralized free software social media. And I'm not talking about a group of us. I mean, all humans.
Of course. But when she said we need to make life hard for the people who aren't vaccinated.
Yeah, it's abusive.
In her context, she's referring to we as a select group of people, how they are going to control and punish. She specifically is talking about punitive measures for, and not even to get into that issue, but punitive measures for people who have decided not to opt into your preferred preference. We are going to take
it's not even that. It's
that people, against them.
There are people who are pro vaccine who have danced and sang at the advent of mRNA vaccines, who are told by their doctors for pregnancy reasons, for allergy reasons, you are not recommended to get this. And they're saying make their lives harder.
Or as we're now hearing, autoimmune disease that apparently some people have this FDA announcement.
That's right. That's why I'm so offended by door-to-door vaccination, because you go to a doctor, they give you a list, you check off. Do you have all, they give you a huge list of ailments and they're like, check out
right,
what you
right,
have.
Right.
Because the doctor looks at it and goes, oh man, we can't prescribe you this antibiotic because you have X syndrome. But a guy going to your doorstep, they're not going through at 7-Eleven at bars. I don't want to get into that whole debate. The point is, they're not talking about, when she said we, She was referring to a group of people who are ex-governmental or extra-governmental, who somehow have the ability to implement policies and enforcement over everybody else. Who is she or the people on CNN to assert that they have the ability to even enforce non-laws over people who are not part of that group?
Here's the essential truth. They do have that power.
Right.
They do.
They know it.
They do, and when she says that and doesn't get any pushback from any of the, and you can see there's three people on at that point, no pushback whatsoever, because they all have that power, because they know they're in the driver's seat, and they know that they are part of, and there isn't a name for it, and that's why I'm coming up with it. I'm giving this title the overstate, because they know that they are a part of that influence network, right, of those competing interests, of these, in many cases, CNN's owned by a multinational company, right? So we know that they are part of that group that is in power, and they know that they can wield that power over others. And in this moment, there's no check. There's no check on that power.
Republicans aren't even involved in the culture war. Who was it? Jesse Kelly, I think, said Republicans Democrats won the culture war because they were the only ones fighting it.
So this is you know, I know I'm not supposed to do this, but this is William F. Buckley. You know, this is the problem with his famous phrase. So his famous phrase was, a conservative is someone who stands athwart history yelling stop, right? Well, if you're just someone who's standing athwart history yelling stop, and yet other people are going to say, hey, let's try this, let's go here, let's do this.
Was he insulting conservatives?
No, that was his, this is like his most famous quote that's attributed to him.
Who would want to be a conservative?
Right. You know, and he's not actually, now, if you are a conservative, you can say, well, oh, I see what he's saying. We need to preserve institutions that, and social norms and culture and morality that have sustained us for all these years, et cetera, et cetera. But if that's your tactic to just sit there and say, stop, we're not going to do any of this anymore. It's like, no one's going to come to your party, man.
Yeah. Nobody's
going to show up.
He's right.
Offering anyone anything.
He is right. That's exactly what conservatives are.
And conservatives always have followed that for 70 years.
He's identified the group. They didn't adhere to what he said. He identified a group of people that just said, we're good here. And that's it. They're not fighting. So I don't know.
Right, standing. So you just stand there and say stop. You know, Paul Ryan with his little bow tie.
I think there's a lot of things in this country that need to change, but I think there's a lot of things that are good. We want to keep the good. Imagine, you know, what these communists are, the overstate, the party members. They represent a group that says, we got this amazing skyscraper, let's tear the whole thing down and then live amongst the rubble as we rebuild. Then you have conservatives who are like, the building's fine as it is, stop. And then you've got other people who are saying, we can probably improve this building quite a bit. Let's keep it and get rid of the broken parts and put in good parts.
I like those people. That's how I identify.
That makes the most sense. So, I don't identify with those who are like, burn it
down.
This
is my problem with the way that a lot of people have been going against the CRT debate, the critical race theory debate, which, and don't get me wrong, right? I think people are doing fantastic work, Chris Rupo specifically on that front. But if you're just going to be one of these governors who says, oh, I'm banning critical race theory and critical race theory bad, like, okay. But if you ever come out of power, they can just take that away, right? You need to be explaining to people the alternative. You need to be explaining to people what is, number one, true history, but then also why, right? Why are these things considered good and this is considered bad? You can't just say to people, oh, we're going to ban this and this is out.
Then I think that's why I think conservative is probably the wrong word. Populist maybe is a better word for it. When we had Charlie Kirk on the show, he mentioned that during Occupy, the conservative movement wasn't ready for a lot of these things, like calling out the corporations and censorship and Wall Street and big tech and things like that. And I'm like, I don't think conservatives ever are, because they're literally always just saying stop.
Reactionary? Is that what those reactionaries are?
Reactionaries oppose the revolution.
Right, so reactionary is a term that came up during the French Revolution. And so it was actually a propaganda term used by the Jacobins and the murderous authoritarians of the French Revolution for their political opponents, who said, hey, maybe we shouldn't kill everybody and destroy all of French culture. You know, maybe we can just start go around executing people because we decide we want to. They were called reactionary. So this was actually a propaganda term used by the Red Terror.
Right. So, back to the conservative statement, the populist is maybe a better word. The libertarians are very much involved, but they don't like Donald Trump. I think with Dave Smith and the Mises Caucus, you actually have strong principled libertarians now who very much so will say they don't like Donald Trump, but very much so will oppose a lot of what the Democrats are doing. And I think that's something a lot of the populists actually agree with. So they might not agree with criticism of Trump, but I think the one thing that Trump animated, or the one thing about Trump that animated a lot of people, was anti-establishment. I think there's substantially more anti-establishment people in whatever this faction is. So I don't know what the right word is to describe them. The people who are actually demanding things. You look at people like, you know, Lauren Boebert or Marjorie Taylor Greene, who actually say, hey, we want a thing. Most Republicans are like, we say no to Democrats. I'm like, well, what are you for? What are you actually advocating for?
Okay, I'm smiling right now because you mentioned those. And I want everyone to know that I didn't say anything to Tim prior to this show. But you mentioned those two names just because you see as two people who are fighting, right?
You look in the news and they're actively fighting four things.
When I said that there were potentially members of Congress that were on the Joe Biden list, it was exactly those two, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert.
just those two? Like, those here's two. Our list. It's two
so,
people.
So far, I mean, again, yeah, I don't know if this is the final list, but those are the two members of Congress that I was told.
You know what they've done? You know what Big Tech has done? By banning people on the right, they have made sure that the only voices you hear are the, for the most part, spineless, weak Republicans who just say, please stop Democrats. The fierce, fighting, angry people who are like, this is what we want and why we want it, all have been banned. Not all, but mostly. So now what they've done is...
Well, they're banned or atomized.
What do you mean by atomized?
So atomized is a great example for, Marjorie Taylor Greene, right?
Yeah.
It's like... Right. You know, we've isolated you. We've broken you down to your constituent atoms. You're not a Republican, right? And they force her to go through these struggle sessions.
And even the Republicans do.
Right. And as I was going to say, like, even McCarthy is kind of saying, well, I'm going to strip her of her committees, but I'm not going to kick her out of the caucus and all that. Like, so he's going along with it.
They want to control
he
it.
He goes along with this. So this atomization of it's part of an otherizing. This goes back to, you know, it actually goes back to what the German Stasi would do in East Germany, because when they realized that it got to a certain point where they were disappearing too many people, and they realized that, okay, you know, this is getting a little bit too untenuous for us. Well, okay, what we're going to do then is instead of, you know, disappearing you and locking you up, because that's hard, it costs money, right? You need to go through trial, et cetera. We're just going to destroy your reputation. Right. We're just going to destroy what people think of you. We're going to smear you. We're going to attack you. We're going to use all of our power implements so that people, yeah, you can be out there and you can have your quote unquote free speech, but no one will listen to you.
Yeah. They amazingly condemn Marjorie Taylor Greene for things she said before she was even in office.
Right.
Kevin McCarthy goes along with everything the Democrats say. And it's very obvious. The establishment Republicans and the Democrats are part of the Uniparty. And right now the Republicans are just frantic because there is an invasive force of populists who have come in and started making changes. So maybe what'll happen is they'll put out that list. Oh, Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene are on that list, huh? I'd imagine the America First candidates, the right-wing populist candidates, obviously huge overlap, the ones who are trying to primary, they're all going to be labeled extremists. There's going to be stories in every major newspaper about, oh, these Republicans, they're evil and dangerous. We can't let them win.
And by the way, I don't know if anyone saw this, but this is a huge problem that the populists have, right? Liz Cheney, right? Liz Cheney, who's sort of the avatar of sort of the anti-populist. She's the avatar of the establishment wing, or she's been propped up as this. She just raised $1.8 million, right? She actually put up the highest numbers for any House member. Right. That's Liz Cheney. Now, yeah. I'd like to go through that $1.8 million
where's
all that coming from.
Well, the squad members raise most of their money outside their districts.
Squad raised a ton of money. This is going to come down to a money fight. And there are extremely powerful interests that are fighting against this. And so I do believe, by the way, that populists have the upper hand in terms of numbers right now. I do. I really do. But the money side is going to get filtered in.
They've broken the working class. Oh, sure, you might have the working class on your side. 1 million grassroots donors who are too broke now because the economy's been destroyed to actually give you a penny to help your campaign.
Yeah, when the Roman Empire fell apart completely, the middle class eviscerated and evaporated. It was gone. They completely disseminated the working middle class.
You've got these elites worth the net worth of the billionaires went up substantially. The major corporations' stock values started to skyrocket. small businesses destroyed. And what did that help do? Destroy grassroots activism. Bernie Sanders famously had an average donation of $23 or whatever that number was.
I am once again asking.
but Bernie was able to rise up because he had the people on his side, and all of that money flowing into him empowered him greatly. Well, be it fortuitous for the establishment that they have destroyed the economy and hurt the working class and made them mostly destitute and homeless and living off of government welfare and unemployment bills and child tax credits. Now you could have 10 million supporters. If they're too broke to donate to you, they don't. But the wealthy elites whose net worth went up, they can donate whatever they want to whoever they want. Super PACs.
So we went to the, you mentioned the workers, right? We were out in Nevada for the UFC fight. We went to Joe Rogan and Dave Chappelle the night before. And then because Rogan's in town because he does commentary. So we go to McGregor and Poirier. And at the stadiums where we were going, at the arenas where we were going to show up, the concession stand, the line was like 40 minutes long for each of them. Why? You would go up and you see there's only two people working behind the stand there.
Wow. Wow.
That's it. Right, because that town, that city, that's the entertainment capital of the state, right? That's their entire economy. It was decimated by COVID, and that now they have a worker shortage because there's so many people that are living off of government. I say, hey, I get this money for free. For that, I got to go deal with drunk people. I got to go deal with, you know, whatever. You got my order wrong, so I got to go deal with emotional abuse. Why go back to work if I can still get government money for this?
It's a
massive worker shortage out there.
It's a time bomb. You know, it's the bill will come due. It's which law of thermodynamics, Ian? You know,
perhaps the second law of thermodynamics.
Second law.
To be honest, I don't know. Are you talking about when an object in motion will remain in motion unless forced upon?
This idea that you can get things for free without making things.
Huh. Oh, free energy.
Yeah. Eventually, what happens is the value of the dollar becomes zero, because why work?
Well, the problem with the thermodynamic thing that says you can't get more energy out of a system than you put into it only assumes that there's a closed system that you're working within. But in reality, there are no closed systems. Energy can always come from further away than we knew it existed. So I do believe zero-point energy
is
possible.
You mean like slave labor in China?
Yeah, like there will always be more slaves. We can always have more children and make them more slaves. I'm kind of joking around, but I'm also...
Yeah, no,
Americans spending money and not producing anything won't last
forever. We'll have to default on it. We're going to have to default on the federal government.
And by the way, this all goes back to the 90s. This goes back to NAFTA. This goes back to China and the WTO.
Which goes back to 79.
This goes back. It goes back and back and back. This was the idea. China will be the manufacturing base, right? That will be China. That will be moved to China, right? And then America will be the consumers. America will say, you sit there, you're going to, you know, whatever is the new movie that gets rolled off the assembly line, you're all going to go watch it. Then, and now they don't even need to do that. Now you're just streaming, right? You can just sit in your home and you're going to have it delivered to you, and you click this and you say, oh, I'm going to watch this. And then you just go on to the next one, and you go on to the next one.
It's the end of days, my friends. Check out this story from the Daily Mail. 1972 prediction of the collapse of society is on track to happen by 2040. Economic growth will halt in a decade. Food will become scarce and human population will decline. KPMG study finds. They say MIT used a world simulation model to learn how our world would fare from 1972 to 2060. The model looked at a number of factors, such as population, industrial output, and persistent pollution, and found a societal collapse could happen by 2040. The research was criticized at the time, but an accounting firm, Analysis, took another look at MIT's data and found their stark prediction was correct. The recent work shows our business-as-usual mentality will spark a decline of economic growth within the next decade, but a total collapse by 2040. I wonder if there are powerful international elites who saw that news in 1972, saw those stories, and then not by a conspiracy but by a standalone complex, very powerful individuals influenced by similar things, decided to take actions within their industries in a certain direction which led us to today.
Oh, like a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Yeah.
I got one. I can go back even further.
What do you got?
Nikola Tesla.
What did he say?
1920s. And it's just very quick, very quick. Technical advances are inevitably driving us toward the grossest kind of materialism. Mm-hmm. Before long, the social system of bee life will be universal.
Bee life.
Bug men.
So we've got Cuba.
Predicted by Tesla.
We've got Cuba in revolt. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's a one-off. We got South Africa. There was some audio that was posted by the guy, Phoenix Ammunition guys tweeted this out, retweeted it, where it's like audio recordings where he's like, we're lending out 1,000 rounds. They're saying they're running out of ammunition. And then there's another audio recording where it's like, we're running out of bullets. There's thousands of them. We can't stop them. By nightfall, the city will burn. South Africa, dude. But you look at these things.
Jacob Zuma's son, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Loot responsibly.
So his father was the president who was arrested.
Right.
Loot responsibly.
We've got war with China, potentially. We've got Russia, China, Iran threatening us over what's happening in Cuba. We had that incident a couple years ago. Was that in Venezuela where that cruise ship was like rammed or something?
And the
Venezuelans tried to steal it. You get this MIT report, and we're sitting here talking about civil war and Thucydides' trap and the fourth turning. And now we can add another predictor to that mix.
You know, humans blowing each other up is one problem. And I don't want to derail this because this is a good conversation. But what I fear is what happened in Texas when it froze over and the wind turbine stopped working. The electric grid shut down. The centralized electric grid failed.
California
people started
too.
Freezing to death. Wildfires that burn people alive because they can't get out. Asteroid impacts, collisions, floods. We have a centralized electric grid that cannot handle these things. People without electricity, I've never seen that in my life, and I don't want to. But that is what that's what I'm afraid of. This stuff, blowing each other up, this has been a threat since dawn of man.
This 2040 study isn't saying we're going to blow up. It's going to say society is going to collapse.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, what is society?
How are they defining that? That's why one of the first things I ever did when I got a smartphone was I downloaded a survival guide.
Yeah, I did too. I have one on my phone.
Yeah, because it's just a smart thing to do. People go camping sometimes.
Yeah, if you have a smartphone, get one.
I'm like, I might go camping and need to learn know how to start a fire or, watch out for poison ivy or something. But hey, in the event that you get lost in the woods, you're going to love that you got a little bit of that battery left. You turn the brightness way down and start looking like, what do I do? How do I find my way out? You know what's really interesting? One of the biggest mistakes people make when they get lost somewhere is they leave their car. You know why that's the stupidest thing you can do? When the helicopter's flying over, like, there's a car, and they
like
go down.
Like a million
down.
Reasons. Yeah. That's the worst thing you could do.
They go down, they find the car, and the person's gone.
Or double back to it. I mean, that would be...
Just stay in the car.
If you're trying to find something.
Stay still if you
I'm not
going
to give you advice. I'm going to say just take care of yourself. Be responsible. Yeah, you look at what happened in Texas. There's things like that happen, but here's the crazy part. Our cities have gotten so big. What happens when the power goes out for a long enough period of time that order breaks down? I mean, you look at what happened in South Africa with all of the stores being looted, the warehouses being looted, when order is just when people are like, hey, guess what? Law's off. The purge happens.
Well, and not only that, but not it's not just order. It's when made to order. Right. It's when on demand breaks down. Right. It's when I can't get my Disney Plus. It's I can't get my streaming. I can't get this. I can't get my Uber Eats. I can't get all of these different things where stuff is just delivered to me by my gig slaves. When that breaks down and suddenly I have to, I know people who don't even shop anymore.
It's easily exemplified by the Treehouse of Horror with The Simpsons, where it was a play on The Shining, and Homer was trying to, he had no TV. So he became murderous and started rampaging around trying to kill his family, the Simpson family. And then finally,
No TV, make Homer something.
And then they're outside, and then Homer is like, come sit with me by the warmth of the TV, and he finally has a little TV, and then they're sitting there, and the TV power dies, and they're frozen, and then Homer says, urge to kill rising. That's basically what it is you're referring to. The crazy thing about this is, it used to be that if you wanted a cheeseburger, you had to wait for it. You had to go buy the ingredients, you had to go make it yourself, then we're in the diner era. And then McDonald's is like, we're going to invent a way where you can walk up and get that burger real quick. And people were like, whoa. Now people are so spoiled. They go to a restaurant. They wait 5 minutes. They freak out. Where's my food? They're throwing stuff at the counter. Yeah. If we go back to the era where it's like you got to wait a month to get tomatoes because you're growing
them. This is having my, my wife and then her parents live with us and they're from Eastern Europe, right? They don't have that. They don't have that at all because they don't have, maybe some of like the big cities in Eastern Europe, they have that, but for them, it's, hey, I went out in the morning, I bought some fresh stuff and now I'm going to cook it. I'm going to spend the day, washing it and cooking it, preparing the dinner and getting it done. And I joke about this, but they won't even use the dishwasher. Why would I use that? I can just wash it by hand, right?
Well, to be honest, dishwashers don't work.
Yeah, they don't.
You end up having to wash it anyway.
Right. But I mean, they wouldn't even consider to putting it in the dishwasher, right? And it really is, and sometimes we do have this kind of culture clash. They're not big on air conditioning. And they're just super like, they're way more used to, hey, if you want to get something, if you want some walnuts, if you want some cucumbers, hey, go outside. Here's a basket. Go get them.
Yep.
Right? You want some cranberries? Go do this. That's how you take care of
stuff.
That's
the future, not the past. And, that's the future.
And you look at what we have now, and it always makes me kind of reflect back on the way, you know, raised
strawberries
here,
in winter.
You know, you come out and say, is this better? Right? Is our way better?
It's strawberries in winter.
It's better for building brain matter because, like, having access to all those nutrients make us able to be stronger potentially intelligently, but people have been abusing it. I mean, if you put aspartame.
I've been walking around.
I partially disagree.
I partially disagree,
and I think you're correct about the availability of nutrients, but people eat random trash.
Yeah, that's the problem.
They go to McDonald's.
People are abusing the system. They're not taking advantage of it. Properly. They're taking disadvantage with it.
They go to McDonald's. They buy a cheeseburger and fries. What do they have for dinner? They'll do a chicken sandwich and fries. And it's like you're not getting real vegetables. You might get a tomato, I guess. But
that's
which is
thing.
A fruit, by the way.
Tanya's father, when he came to the U.S., we went out. I think I forget where we were, but we were in some place. And like the only thing that was open was fast food. And we got some stuff, and he was like, "I'm not eating this." Like this, and we're like, "Why?
It's gross."
It's to him, he's like, "This is not food. This is like plastic
mush."
Yeah. And then, so when I go over and visit, by the way, and you eat the food there, like farm to table isn't like they don't even say that because that's just food, right?
Right.
In Eastern Europe, so you get it, and then you start eating stuff, and you realize it doesn't have the sort of sensationalism kind of tastes that U.S. food would have. But it's richer, and you can really taste, you know, the true nutrients that are in it. You can taste so many different flavors that you weren't used to having. You say, oh, this is what meat is supposed to taste like. This is what vegetables are supposed to taste
like. It's not just that. It's when you're eating nothing but garbage, you lose. I'll put it a better way. When you're really, really hungry, everything tastes better. When you're eating healthy, and then you have those garden fresh veggies and you're eating it, you're like, it just tastes so good. It's like when you imagine like chugging a bunch of soda and then eating a scoop of ice cream and like your sweetness overload. Do you ever have that?
Yeah.
Where it's like the ice cream doesn't even taste sweet because you have too much sugar in your mouth already.
Yeah.
That's basically everything. I was reading about sugar addiction and how the sugar content of our drinks kept going up for a long period of time because people would drink a soda with like 10 grams of sugar. And then they would find a soda with 15 and be like, ooh, this one's better. And so then the next company's like, make it 17, make it 19, make it 20, 25. Now it's up to, I think, for like a Coke, 48 grams of sugar in a can.
Well, isn't that the thing where, and I'm sure this is more apocryphal than an actual true story, but the idea that Coca-Cola used to be, you know, it was used to actually have cocaine in it, right?
Yeah.
So that was really get the name. So,
I think that's true.
You know, no, that's true. The next part is, you know, we're basically, they said, well, once that was criminalized, they had to find something else that was just as addictive to put in their sodas. So they found sugar.
Well, they found caffeine. Caffeine has a very, very similar effect on the human body to cocaine, actually.
Oh, wow. They did both.
Yeah. Well, in terms of your energy boost. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, caffeine causes euphoria. It stimulates the brain in a very, very similar way.
Man, there actually is, and I think we talked about this on one of the last times I was here, but that you could actually trace the Enlightenment to the introduction of coffee in Europe, right?
Psychoactive stimulants,
right?
and that's why people are suddenly
and then prior to that, right? And if you look at any like medieval literature or any medieval just sources, you always see people always, they're going to the inn, they're drinking mead, they're drinking, that's like, people were kind of buzzed all the time. Like the water, you know, healthy water or drinkable water was not readily available in the Middle Ages. And so if you want something, you want it fermented, you want something that's been processed. So you are going to be drinking alcohol more. So there's this idea that people just in the Middle Ages were just generally kind of buzzed all the time.
It was safer to drink, you know?
Right.
Did you know that Coke has coffee?
Yeah, they do.
No, I did not.
I just found this out today.
Really?
It was a Coca-Cola can, but it said coffee on it, and I was confused. So I was like, I'm going to try it. It's got Splenda in it. So I cracked it open. I tasted it. I was like, wow, it's actually really good.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be bad. And then I was like, I looked at the nutrition.
I remember Pepsi coffee. They had Pepsi Kona.
Really?
Pepsi Kona.
I looked at the nutrition information on the Coke, and it was like 11 grams of sugar, and I was like, that's impossible. This is way too sweet. And boom, Splenda.
Splenda.
I don't drink that stuff.
What do you do? Do you use Stevia?
Stevia is all right, but I just either drink water or I drink pure sugar, cane sugar, whatever.
Splenda's sucralose, which is, I don't know, sucralose.
Yeah, it's your body doesn't digest it. I'm not a fan of that stuff. I like
monk
fruit.
We've been doing a lot of Monk.
Splenda was aspartame.
Monk's legit.
What's that?
I thought Splenda was aspartame.
No, Splenda
is
sucralose.
This is saying that it's sucralose.
It is, yeah, okay. Splenda is sucralose.
Okay. Or the original.
I don't care for any of that stuff.
Maybe that's, maybe that's equal.
Oh, this says that they originally were contained sucralose. It's also known for using monk fruit, stevia, and allulose.
Yeah, monk fruit I hear is all right. Equal is aspartame.
It's equal,
and then sweet and low is saccharin.
Ugh.
I don't care for any of that stuff. You know, we have a bunch of sodas from this company called Route 66. I just ordered from. It's like a Chicago company. Pure cane sugar. I don't want to have too much of that anyway, but if we're going to have soda, pure cane. We do have these Japanese sodas that are really fun. It's got the marble and you like pop it in.
Yeah.
And that's fructose glucose syrup, which probably just means high fructose corn syrup. So, and we got a bunch of sodas with that high fructose corn syrup. What's the new stuff?
Something fructose. There's a new kind of fructose that's out.
Well, that's the other thing, by the way, with Tanya. She, anything that's like sodas, anything carbonated, all that, she just doesn't want any of it.
Water.
That's great.
Just
amazing.
She drinks water. And if she wants a little bit of a pick me up, she'll go for a green tea.
I went out to, we got pizza today and they didn't have water. I was just like, I guess I'll have Coke.
Maybe.
I don't like Coke at all. Yeah.
That's some Middle Ages stuff going on.
I mean, they could pour me a glass of water, but I don't want to drink some unfiltered well water. You know what I mean?
I'm big on coconut water. This is the Moho we've been getting. And this is like no other coconut water I've ever had. I mean, it's just enough sugar that it's pH balanced for your body.
pH balanced. Didn't they? I heard that they used to use coconut water as IV fluid.
Yeah. Like you could direct. I don't know if it's true.
Yeah. Sounds cool, though.
When I was living in China, coconut milk. I really got Yeager Nye. I was like anywhere I could get it, and it's big over there. It's actually pretty big. I was drinking coconut milk like crazy. There was actually this Taiwanese brand that I would just got really into.
So what's the future, man? Are we all going to be back to living in huts and caves and farmers?
That's what happened when Atlantis got smashed 12,800 years ago.
No.
Historically,
hold on.
A comet shattered
over North America. I want to talk about Atlantis.
You guys are talking short term. This is before it went under Antarctica.
Let's talk about what happened to Rome.
Okay.
Let's keep it.
Okay, good idea. Political upheaval.
What happened to the people?
Italy still exists, right? I mean,
Rome still exists.
Like Rome as a city still exists, right? The Roman.
It got annihilated,
in terms
of
the people.
It got conquered and then reconquered and then conquered back and then reconquered
again.
Right. People were living in like shelled out buildings and the population was decimated by 90%+.
And so when you put all this together, right? When you do put all this together, when you talk about the weakening of the U.S. as a system, right? The U.S. as a system. And then you go to the military side and you can see, so Russia, Iran, and China are telling us what we need to do in our backyard. And then you've got the U.S. Navy study that comes out that says, look, we would lose a major conflict right now on the seas. We would lose. I say as a former naval officer, and I think they're right. Like we are not ready to fight a near peer competitor, right? Imagine the U.S. losing, and I'll just put it out there. Imagine the U.S. losing a maritime conflict over Taiwan. Like China moves on Taiwan, we say we're going to defend them. We say no. Japan comes to rallies, but Korea says not worth it maybe. And then Australia says we'll pitch in, but really the U.S. is leading the whole thing, and they just straight up lose.
If that happens,
think about what that does to the American psyche.
What happens with the rest of the world when the United States has blood in the water and all of the sharks start coming, realizing the U.S. can't defend its allies anymore. All it takes, when you look at what happens in a lot of these countries, like the police breakdown in South Africa where the cops are actually looting now. Once the unrest gets to a certain point, people say the cops can't stop us. And we saw it in the United States in Baltimore and Ferguson. The police can stop, it's like whack-a-mole. When the whack-a-mole is coming up really slow, the cops can go and stop unrest. But when they keep coming up like crazy, there's not enough police to stop it.
So I was in the Freddie Gray riots, not participating. The thing that got me about that was the speed. Right, the speed at which...
The whole city. I was driving down the street, and I saw some random people walking down the street just stop and throw something through a window and climb in to rob from the store.
And what blew my mind was that you knew it was going to happen. Is everyone in the city knew there's going to be riots tonight. It'll probably be around 5:30. And the police were basically told. So the governor hadn't called in the National Guard yet. Actually, a buddy who was called up in that. But for the first night, there was no National Guard. Right. You had the mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, who says we need to give them room to protest.
Right.
Marilyn Mosby gives this, her No Justice, No Peace speech, blocks me on Twitter for yelling about her. Completely illegal, but I'm actually glad that that she blocked. The OK Boomer girl blocked me today, actually.
I saw that. Congratulations.
Thank you. I just said, thank God. Thank God. Just,
wasn't she doing like a promo for a phone or something?
So she was doing a promo for a phone.
Yeah.
And then someone said to her, like, oh, are you going to do an iOS version? And then she responds, Team Android, right? And then on the tweet, because it says like how, what, you know, what format
it said, you iPhone?
It said tweet by iPhone on the tweet. So I just quote tweeted that and I wrote tweet by iPhone and she blocked me.
Nah. Yeah, so anyway, the riots.
So everyone knows that it's going to happen. The police are basically only deployed around certain areas. They've made lines. But if you're at the Mendowan Mall, which is in North Baltimore, that place was smashed apart. And I'll say this too, because people will get on me and say, oh, well, that was, you know, this, whatever. No, it was every race, every ethnicity, every group under the sun. You saw Asians, Hispanic, white, black, everybody was getting in on this, right? You were going to the Target, you were grabbing a TV, you were grabbing anything you could. There were pickup trucks full of appliances and I would just see him just driving by with it, or a guy like holding a couple of laptop boxes walking down the street. I mean, it was just chaos, just mass chaos. And it was in an eye blink. Everything that you think our society is, right? All of those basic, you know, unspoken, you know, the unspoken rules, but then also just the actual laws on the books disappeared, and everybody knew it. And everybody, it was like a purge night. It was the only difference between, I think the first Purge movie had been out at that point. You know, the only difference was that in the Purge, they actually have an announcement. This was just sort of a tacit understanding that, hey, go do crimes now.
Here's what happens if China takes Taiwan and the U.S. can't stop it. That's when the rest of the world sees the United States cannot police anything. They can't defend their allies. And then you'll start seeing things pop up in certain areas. The U.S. will try to quell certain uprisings. Allies will call for help. The U.S. won't be able to. And then there it is.
The Taiwan thing, Hong Kong thing makes me kind of think of Cuba. Like, I don't think the U.S. should be involved with Taiwan and Hong Kong purely because it's China, geographically right next to China. Whereas I don't think they should be messing with Cuba. Whereas not that it's American soil and not that Taiwan is Chinese soil. And if the Americans were to invade Cuba and take it, they would do it economically anyway.
Yeah, it's fascinating that China has to its southeast this island that they claim is theirs, and the people there are not communists, and the U.S. is saying, don't you dare intervene or we'll stop you. And then you have in the southeast of the U.S., Cuba, which is communist, and you get China, Russia, and Iran saying, don't you dare intervene.
It's interesting enough that one thing that people leave out about the Taiwan situation, the reason they don't call themselves the country of Taiwan officially is because they still maintain that they are the sovereign power over all of China and Mongolia.
Oh, of course.
Which wasn't the time. So that's Republic of China.
What we call mainland China is actually West Taiwan.
That's right.
Right, exactly.
So the government, the Republic of China, fled to Taiwan. This is like in the 60s or 50s.
Right, so they've never officially recognized the communist government of China as the official government. The U.S. did under Jimmy Carter. This was not something that Kissinger said they were never going to do, that Nixon said never do this, but Carter gave official recognition.
Wow.
This is what switched the seat, by the way. So the Republic of Taiwan, this is actually, it's not just an academic thing, because prior to the 1970s, the seat on the U.N. Security Council for China was actually controlled by Taiwan, because that was seen as the internationally recognized government of China. When that switch happened, again, 1979, right? When that switch happened, that is when you really now see, and then 10 years later is what, Tiananmen Square, and what repercussion did China face? What repercussion did the CCP face for the Tiananmen Square massacre?
I don't think anything. I mean, did they? Anything? Any
they
sanctions?
They were rewarded. They were rewarded with increased foreign domestic investment. They were said, or direct investment. They said they were told we just need to bring them more into the order. They just need more KFCs and more McDonald's and Saks Fifth Avenue and Gucci and Louis Vuitton and everything else. If we can just get them more of the international order, well, they'll just be better. Okay, this is by design. It has nothing to do with human rights. It has nothing to do with human agency. It has nothing to do with all of these things, natural law, all of these things we talk, it's money. It's money and power at the end of the day. All these fancy, you know, terms and euphemisms that we can come up with, it's just money and power at the end of the day. they have it and they don't want you to have it.
And the idea is that you, the pleb, will be in the renter class and they will own.
Yep. Is it they don't want you, the pleb, to have it because they're afraid the pleb will unseat them? Like, are they afraid of their... Are they afraid for their livelihoods and their family and their money?
Okay, you need to understand, Ian, that as the ignorant rabble, you truly don't understand worldly affairs.
Okay.
And the elites...
I don't understand.
...need to manage all of this stuff. Mm. Otherwise, humans simply become massively overweight and addicted to drugs and video games, and they overpopulate, and eventually the Earth just falls apart. It is incumbent upon better men to decide what you should do with your life.
Oh, remember, this is referred to as noblesse oblige.
Don't worry. You will own nothing, but you will be happy.
My question, though, is will I learn discipline?
It won't matter.
I see. Why?
You won't
because
be
you won't
choice.
Be able to disrupt anything.
But do these people have discipline?
Of course they don't.
Whoa. You can't impose discipline on our betters.
Right.
No.
How dare you?
They are the highborn and we are the lowborn.
The highborn.
And that's what it is. No, I go back. Look, people, there's some guy who's getting on me for running a Game of Thrones blog. And that's like how I first, kind of was operating on the internet. And some guy was getting on me over this. And then they were like, oh, you're just some Game of Thrones blogger. I was like, well, I mean, I was an intelligence officer at the same time. It's not publicly. And then I'm like, but that being said, I think it's actually quite useful to understanding where we're going and how we see things, right? There is an aristocracy. They are the highborn. They're different factions, right? They're like the different houses. So certainly there are different factions vying for power, but you would never see a member of one of the houses of Westeros allowing one of the, they even call them the small folk. There's a word for this in Chinese, la bai xing, means the old hundred names. And so there's the idea that they are the rabble. They are the deplorables, if you will. And we are the elites. We are those in power.
Yeah. Why should they leave the world, the fate of the world in the hands of people who eat, who drink a quart of soda with their triple cheeseburger smothered
washing their
in
teeth
barbecue
with
sauce.
Mountain Dew,
Yeah.
I actually tell you a story. When I was in Shanghai, so I was at the Shanghai American Chamber of Commerce, and there is a museum it's not really a museum. They call it the Shanghai Municipal Planning Museum, but it's actually more of a planning center. And when CODELs, congressional delegations or business delegations or governors or senators, whatever, would come to Shanghai, they would always bring them to the Municipal Planning Center, right? And they would say, into this museum. And the CCP members, so this is the local Shanghai party, and actually when I was there, the guy who was the chairman of the city party of Shanghai was a guy by the name of Xi Jinping, right? He's gone on to become a little bit more prominent.
Congratulations.
I know. Yeah. Good for him. Yeah.
Old buddies.
we always knew at the time, I actually had the opportunity to meet him once. And we always knew that he was going up to Politburo, but we didn't realize it was going to be that big that fast. I always kind of referred to him as he was like the Shanghai Tony Soprano, which is how he carried himself. Yeah. With huge entourage, overcoat, off the shoulder kind of deal. But when they would bring our leaders there, right, Martin O'Malley, I remember he came over when he was governor, they would go down and they would say, wait a minute, so you guys, if you decide you want a financial sector, you can just draw on the map and say, this is going to be our financial district, and boom, you just have it within 10 years and it's just there. And if you want capital, it's just handed to you. And if you want a high speed rail, boom, you just get your high speed rail and you can put it wherever you want. You say you want an entertainment center, Disney wants a park, right? Now Shanghai Disney has a park.
Yep.
So I was actually I was in some of those early planning meetings with Disney in Shanghai as they're meeting with the CCP to say, okay, we're going to build our park. We want it here. And, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, what about all the people who have lived there, those families? These are actually, there's a historic type of building that they would have in old Shanghai called the Shirkuman. And there are these really cool, like, interlocking houses and sort of like housing units where you'd have a courtyard and then around it people would go. And then so people could meet, the kids would go in the courtyard and like older couples would kind of hang out there to kind of sort of like watch over the kids, teach them things. And then if there were these communities, and it's all stone, right? And I was like, well, what's happening with all them? What about all those that are there? Wiped out, destroyed, demolished.
Do they give them money or anything?
No.
Just bye-bye.
You don't even, in China, you can't, funny enough, in China, you can't own anything.
Right,
you cannot own land. Right, you can lease it for about 99 years, but the government always owns all the land.
Meaning
right?
they can take it at any moment?
it is theirs. It's already theirs. Oh. Actually, the word communism in Mandarin, Gong Chan Ju Yi, literally means public propertyism. Right? If you translate it directly, Gong Chan, it means public property. So private ownership is the opposite of communism.
A little aside, have you guys ever heard or played Romance of the Three Kingdoms or read the novel?
I've read the novel, yeah.
From 1600s, Luo Guangxiao wrote
it. Yeah.
One of the heroes is Liu Bei, who is this guy who wants to restore the Han Dynasty. The emperor has fallen, and all these warlords are vying for power, but this one guy who's kind of the moral hero of the story wants to restore the old empire. And they make him this, like, massive hero, and I'm realizing this is CCP, this is propaganda, man. This is imperial propaganda. We're supposed to love the Han.
Have you ever watched Hero with Jet Li?
Negative.
Look, that's spoiler, that's kind of the ending.
What they've realized is
he's a rebel
that,
who then joins the Empire at the end. It's like Luke Skywalker joining the Emperor at the end, killing his friends. Yeah.
You know, what's it called? Hero?
Hero with Jet Li. So, anyway, point
he's
being,
great.
Just to finish off my story, though, are all the American leaders that would come through Shanghai, they would say, this is great.
Yeah.
This is awesome. How do I get this? I want that. I want to bring that to the U.S., right? They weren't going over there and learning and teaching China how to do things. They were going over there and saying, hey, I want this back home.
Yeah.
We need some of that.
Authoritarianism.
We need more of this. We need these people with their little lives. They're just in our way. We're going to tell them what's what. We're going to get this type of control.
And that's exactly what started to happen. But let's ask the audience with Super Chats, if you have not already. Smash that like button. It is greatly appreciated. Subscribe to this channel. Share the show with your friends and go to timcast.com. Become a member. We will have a members-only podcast coming up around 11 or so p.m. But let's read some of these super chats and take questions. Beginning with Turk Longwell says, Tim, before Twitter banned me for loving America, I once got a POSO bump from him retweeting me. Sadly, it only lasted for a month. Still, thanks, Jack. There you go.
Well, you're very welcome. And if you're worried about bumps in the night and you're worried about your sleep, the best way to be knowing that you have an upgraded sleep system is by going to mypillow.com/POSO and using promo code POSO, the Giza Dream Sleep Show.
There you go.
Right now.
I knew it.
Yeah, I told you I have the slippers, right? Actually, they're downstairs.
I got them from my dad. I got them from my dad for Father's Day. He won't take them off.
Yeah,
he wears them everywhere.
They're legit good. All right. Brandizzle says, please Google preparing for a hurricane. And take a look at the suggested guidelines. I think you will find it informative.
I've seen it.
That's right.
Yeah, it says get vaccinated.
What? Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
Yeah, for COVID. Yeah.
From the
wow. Because, you know,
yeah.
All right. I'll have to look at that.
Real weird.
All right. Let's see what we got. Alexander Dominguez says, this is different than the U.S. going to the Middle East. The people of Cuba overwhelmingly want the U.S. there. Help us end communism in our country. What if Cuba became the 51st state? Like Puerto Rico and Guam.
I love the idea from a distance without knowing much about it. I don't know.
You know,
why.
So there's a lot of talk about it.
It'd be Republican.
I mean, you don't have to go back very far to the 1950s. You know, 1959 is the revolution, but you don't have to go back far. Even in the musical, what is it, Guys and Dolls? Right. There's actually a scene in there where they just fly from New York to Havana, and he takes this girl on the date. Guy Masterton takes her out on this date. And so it was just seen as like a place you could go in the Caribbean very easily. And so there was actually talk of, funny enough, the Confederacy was talking about conquering Cuba at one point and turning
wow.
and using that as a redoubt in a very, you know, kind of an eerie sort of like mirror version of what happened with Taiwan and China, right? They were talking about taking over Cuba and making that a Confederate state at one point.
Did you see the story about the George Floyd mural?
The lightning. Yeah, I saw that.
Let me tell you a story. So the other day, after we finished the show, Cassandra messaged me and she's like, whoa. And it's a story. George Floyd mural destroyed by lightning strike. Doppler radar confirms a lightning strike occurred in the area around 4:30 p.m. And the building is structurally sound. The building is still totally fine. It's the outer brick wall that got blown out by the lightning strike. Only the George Floyd mural. And I checked immediately. You know what I did? I checked the weather in Toledo for that day. And it was sunny all day, except for this moment where a storm gathered over the building, lightning struck the mural, and then immediately the storm dissipates. And like, when you look at the photos, you can see the ground is mostly dry and there's like a little bit of water, like you can see the discoloration a little bit. And it's like, the weather said it was sunny with scattered clouds all day. No reported rain, yet rain forms, lightning strikes the building, and then the rain leaves. So a lot of people are like immediately saying, I'm going to go to church on Sunday this time.
Well, yep. you know what you got to say with a story like that. Holy Toledo.
Dude, I've worked out. I've spent time moving the clouds. I mean, where bodies have electromagnetic, toruses of energy.
You're
the dynamo. Clouds. And the clouds are also lightweight electromagnetic energy. I've had very explicit events where clouds have spun, like I was working out and the clouds start to spin and then part. And you can see the moon in a whole. I mean, we are connected to this planet in so many ways.
I don't know about that.
The Schumann resonance is this weird, like, extremely low frequency of resonance in our.
Me and Jack just look at each other
in
like,
the upper magnetosphere of Earth. But I mean, lightning. I think it's more connected to human consciousness
than
we realize.
Yeah, the magnetosphere.
And you're not storm. You don't control the weather.
It's just a guess, but I think in 1,000 years they'll be like, "Wow, they didn't. They had no idea.
Again.
They thought it was just some. That it was just there. They didn't realize."
Well, I'll say this. Look, the simple solution with stories like this is like buildings get struck by lightning all the time and we don't care. Like it's not news. But this one happened to have a mural on it. So all of a sudden we're like, oh, it's a sign. It's an act of God or whatever. Well, I think insurance companies would call it an act of God, you know, so their insurance will pay for it. Whether or not it's actually a sign from some divine creator, I'll tell you, it's a crazy story.
There's like ancient history.
Was there anything metallic on the the side there? That's what I'm trying to think. Like what attracted, or it's like when we take our kids to the, the pool, we have a pool that we take them. But just the other day there was there was some thunder and it was like, okay, out of the pool, straight up get out of the pool. Does it, come and we're going to go inside. So, I'm just wondering if there's something
they've got the Native American rain dance. I mean, they believe they could call the rain. Ancient Chinese warriors could call the rain.
Ancient societies around the world believed that there was a direct connection between human action and weather.
The butterfly effect. Hey, how about that one? All right. Archangel says, first super chat. I love the show and everyone on it. Jack, what is your favorite Sabaton song and album?
My favorite song is the Winged Hussars, obviously. Favorite hair of an album, probably Last Stand. I'd have to go with that. I'm still just debating whether I want to go see them twice or three times on their upcoming tour.
Tough call.
All right, let's see. I can't read your name, but thanks for the super chat. Says, Tim, would you be willing to bring on Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, or Bo Bergdahl? Bring on the dissidents.
Bo Bergdahl was not a dissident.
Who's Bo Bergdahl?
Bo Bergdahl is a guy who deserted and tried to join the Taliban.
Yeah.
Oh.
Not great.
I definitely would not put him in the same category.
Yeah, Snowden and Julian Assange I'm familiar with. Bergdahl, not so much.
Perhaps they meant Manning.
Mm. Yeah.
Perhaps they meant Chelsea Manning.
I was going to say Eli Manning.
I'll tell you, the Chelsea Manning story is really interesting because, when Chelsea goes into prison, coming out, the entire left-right paradigm was mirrored and completely fractured. Like, WikiLeaks was now the bad guy. So what do you do in that situation where you're like, you're on the left, you're like, go WikiLeaks, I will support you.
So the left is in this weird position where they were like pro Chelsea Manning, but anti Julian Assange.
Right.
Whereas it's like, wait, what? But they together created what, became, the
that,
biggest
that
WikiLeaks
whole,
story.
That whole Chelsea Manning, Cassandra Fairbanks thing was really twisted stuff.
What was it?
I mean, I can't go through the whole story about it, but they were, I don't want to speak too much. I'm friends with Cassandra and I don't know exactly what happened, but I think it's just like they were friends because, Cassandra very much supports WikiLeaks and Chelsea, but then Chelsea was Antifa and Cassandra was a Trump supporter. So there was this weird, thing that happened. And I guess something happened with like Chelsea claiming she was infiltrating the right or something like that. I don't know.
She showed up to the, I was there. It was at a Night for Freedom in New York City. I actually was the person who made sure that, she had a comp ticket and was able to get in. My brother was manning the door and I said, hey, Manning. And I said, hey, just so you know, Chelsea Manning's going to come in. I know there is some Antifa outside, but here's a photo, just so you know. Give me a call to make sure everything's cool. And we had, like BuzzFeed there and a guy who, Charlie Roselle, who he was a New York Times writer. Now he's like a Substack guy, who was there. And we had a guy from New Yorker who was there. And so suddenly it became this huge thing that, Chelsea Manning's at this event with the new right. And then Chelsea.
Well, they didn't say new right.
Yeah. and then Chelsea had to put out this big, it was an infiltration operation. Oh, and I was there to, find out. And it's like, it was a public event. Like we sold tickets.
Think about what there was a lot of people who's they one day woke up to find that their friends on the left had completely flipped. And I know this firsthand. I know a lot of people have experienced this. And I guess if you're moderately weak-willed, it's brain-breaking. So there's like I'm friends with a ton of I still would consider myself to be friends with a lot of the old hacker community, a lot of these more prominent hackers and things like that. Many, although mostly it's like kind of broken up quite a bit. The OG hackers from like the late 2000s, or I shouldn't say OG, but like some of the prominent hackers of that day, anonymous type individuals, Telecomics, these people were heavily involved, have stayed true to their principles and are still friends with a lot of people. But a very large sect of the hacker community became authoritarian leftist, and it's really weird. Like at the Hope event, it's called Hackers on Planet Earth, they threw out a guy because he had a MAGA hat on. At first, the security guards were like, we don't care if you have a MAGA hat. Like, the hacker community is subversive anti-establishment. But all of a sudden, like, core elements of the hacker community were very much like, oh, egad, Trump supporters. Oh, we must support the FBI and the establishment. So you have to imagine there are these people in the early, I mean, it's crazy to look back. I love referencing Rap News, I think, number 6, because it was a left-wing video praising Julian Assange, criticizing Hillary Clinton, and showing Alex Jones, as a caricature, by the way, claiming the commie Nazi fascists are coming. Now, I guess Alex Jones is called the fascist. Hillary Clinton was the good guy. Julian Assange was the bad guy. Really amazing to see that 10 years ago, that was the left.
Yeah.
Now that's the right. I've been saying this for years. If Juice Media, okay, the Juice Media guys put out a ton of left-wing videos, leftist videos. If they made Rap News today, they would be called far-right fascists. No joke. Go watch Rap News 6. It's hilarious. It's amazing. It's pro-Julian Assange. It's about Cablegate. It's from 2010, I think. Wow. And you can see how the left used to be pro-free speech, anti-Hillary Clinton. Wait.
There's one you're missing, though. Isn't it kind of interesting? And when I talk about this idea of the overstate, right? George W. Bush is suddenly treated as if he's like on this team.
They love him
when he went on Ellen.
They love him. He goes on Ellen. He does all this different stuff, and it's like we've just welcomed him back. This was a guy who I'm old enough to remember all of the Bush years, right? I mean, he was Hitler.
Yeah.
He was a Nazi. He was a war criminal. He was the guy who lied and got us into actually did lie to get us in Iraq, by the way. And all of these different things. He was the scum of the earth. But at least, and this goes back to my earlier contentions, the Game of Thrones thing, highborn versus the lowborn. And I was just, by the way, up in southern Maine where the Bushes have their Kennebunkport. You know, of course, they're from Texas, right? They're from Texas. They don't have a big New England hideout where they hang out, even though he's born in Connecticut. They are part of the highborn. They are part of the aristocracy, right? So even though that one faction was completely against him, right, he still maintains his prestige, and this is, by the way, actual privilege.
Right.
Right. Right. We're not talking about like SJW, critical race theory privilege. This is actual privilege.
It's like, you know, you might fight with people in your family, but you don't you could be yelling about how your sister is dumb and she stole your stereo or something. But then when, you know, so the kid at high school insults your sister, you say, don't talk about my sister
right.
that way.
That's right.
But then
right.
you go home and say the same thing about her, right? So the highborn very much are like, George W. Bush is trash. And then when it comes the highborn versus the lowborn? Is that what the
lowborn,
word is?
Lowborn, yeah.
Then all of a sudden they're like, leave him alone. He's one of us. All right, we got one from BlackRock Beacon. He says, Ian, thank you for telling everyone what BlackRock refers to mythologically. Scrying to uncover hidden truth. It's why I used it for my media brand.
BlackRock Beacon, you are awesome. And I highly recommend if anyone is interested.
Is that what the Obsidian is for?
Yeah, this is the Black Rock. There you this go. Is where the scrying stone. It's really interesting. It feels like I use crystal balls as well. This volcanic glass, I don't know if it's crystal. I don't think it's crystal. But you can store heat in it. You know, use Reiki. But I mean, it's just,
I don't know about all that.
It is. Oh, you will.
Reiki?
Put it in your palm, dude. Okay. And you just cradle it in your palm.
All right, the Civic Nationalist says, I think everyone forgets how the 1930s German NSDAP got into power. It wasn't a violent takeover. It was a slow 10-year process to the camps. Everyone should remember that. Not a shot, but thunderous applause. Stay safe, U.S. And I think we're watching that happen.
And what did they use?
What did they use?
They used to pass the Reichstag. It was the Reichstag
the burning
proclamation.
Right. It was the enabling act.
It was an assault on their parliament. that they use to say we need to pass these emergency measures. Mm-hmm. They're just to stop the current insurrection, right? These playbooks have been played out so many times in the past. You don't need to go back. And I'm not one of those guys who says you have to compare everything to the 1930s. But in that one specific instance, you can actually see it was an assault on their capital, which they used to declare emergency.
September 11th, man, they nailed the Pentagon or whatever. The Pentagon got hit by a plane or whatever the story is. And then the Patriot Act got signed. All of our civil liberties. Essentially, that's like the enabling act of the 21st
century. And then 10 years later, Barack Obama signed the indefinite detention provisions in the National Defense Authorization Act, which allows the U.S. government to effectively rendition anyone, anywhere, for any reason, permanently. So that could be you in your bed at night, just black bagged like Creedy.
Yeah, no, and I'll say this straight up, right? I was a guy who joined the intel community. I thought, boy, this is the way I'm saving America. I'm keeping people safe. This is the way to do it, right? You know, we have these powers, we have these tools, but we're using them against the bad guys, right? So we would never use this against our own people, or that'd be crazy, right? Right. So it's okay that the U.S. has these problems, or has these powers. Now, I'm here to say civil libertarians were 100% right on that, or really anyone who lived through the Vietnam era or understands the Vietnam era, 100% right.
All right. Josh Litovsky says we should ask Elon to smuggle Starlinks into Cuba to let the people get the word out to bypass the government censorship. The one issue, currently Starlink they're sat locked. So each individual link can only connect to one satellite. Yeah, it's a bummer. So until they activate the actual satellites, it's like they're slowly implementing one at a time.
What they really would need is mesh networks.
Right.
So with mesh networks, you can set up your own communication sphere. One that the only way the government would be able to get into it is if they have access to your direct mesh network. And if you have encryption data that they can't break and you can change that up enough, I have no background in this whatsoever from the military, that essentially they'd be able to get some comms up. Or like what they were doing in Iran, they were essentially setting up like, you know how we have AirDrop, you know, where it's this sort of like Bluetooth-enabled communications. They were able to use, I forget what the app was, but it now allows you to create a text messaging within, you know, maybe like 100 meters or so that you can get something across that's not going over any network.
All right. Jank Media says, Jack, are you aware of the Fat Leonard scandal from Comlog Westpac? I was stationed there and worked with lots of people
100%.
Involved. Wild story. What was that?
I'll never forget the Lady Gaga tickets were part of that.
It's
so hard to break this down.
It's a long story.
It's a super long story, but essentially it comes down, in the fast way to break it down is essentially that when a ship pulls into port somewhere, the question of which company, so this bleeds into that military industrial complex, but in terms of not only domestic companies, but also international companies. When a U.S. Navy ship has to pull in somewhere, right? Then, who fuels the ship? Where do they get their food? Where do they get any of the supplies? And when you're talking about an aircraft carrier, just one aircraft carrier, that's 5,000 people. That is a floating city, right? Not to mention all the other crews that might be on it, contractors, et cetera, et cetera. So who gets the money? How are those contracts done? This is all called this is your sourcing and procurement. So the procurement process for this. And with Fat Leonard, he was this, I believe it was Malaysian guy who was just bribing the hell out of admirals and captains and anyone up and down the chain in that procurement background that to make sure that it was always his people and his companies that got involved. So he got busted and I always remember that one of the things they used to bribe was like Lady Gaga tickets.
Amazing.
But it was big. Actually, some pretty big name people went down over that.
Wow. Logan Culver says Michael Malice is a term for the we. It's the cathedral. All
right. So I think cathedral is I've heard that term as well. I know that he's not the only person who uses that. I think it's a bit too esoteric for some people to think. Well, you know, a cathedral is like a place, right?
It's something you can go to. You have to kind of understand the history of what it's referring to,
you do need a lot of understanding for that. And
Miles is a smart guy.
I don't get me wrong. I think it's a great term.
But when you get real smart, you start getting a bit esoteric.
But I think it's a little too esoteric, and that's why. Because the reason I say overstate is because it's sort of a play off of the deep state, right?
Yeah. What's the difference?
Right. So what is the difference? Right. Great example. So the deep state. If you understand that term, that's sort of like that typically I think people refer to the bureaucracy in our government, right? They would refer to that and say, well, this is, you know, the underlings, the sort of the permanent class, the administrative divisions of the U.S. government that originally were supposed to just be subservient to the president in the executive branch, but now have grown. And this is the very Wilsonian idea of an expansive executive where they have just become this own organic state, right? And this is the progressive, small p progressive, vision for how a state, it's a very German idea, by the way, that the state would become its own organism that would be self-perpetuating. And it's very similar to the British civil service. However, the overstate, that gets into all of these other facets of power, right? These other nodes of power that all seem to be working in concert with one another. So the fact is that it goes beyond just what we know as an official government agency or a government body, but all these other nodes of power that are able to then filter in and make these decisions. So when Lina Wen, who's, you know, okay, she's the former president of Planned Parenthood, but she's not a government official in any capacity. She's not elected in any capacity to anything. And yet she has power. She has influence.
So Zuckerberg, not deep state, overstate.
Overstate. And because in a very real sense, they are supranational, like supra. They are above the state.
All right.
German would be Überstaat.
James Nelson says, schism occurred in 2008 with election of Obama. Anyone opposed his policies was labeled racist by MSM. Tea Party formed to push back. First time cons stood up, called racist, Trump elected, deplorables. I could say it goes back to 2000. When you literally had this legal battle over the presidency and people were like, not my president, and they were fighting. George W. Bush got in and they screamed he was Hitler and all this other stuff.
Remember
and
selected, not elected.
Yeah.
That was a big refrain. Selected. Hail to the thief.
The important thing to understand is this all actually goes back to everything can be traced back to one simple thing. Thomas Jefferson saying that the revolution needed the support of South Carolina and Georgia. Thus, he removed the anti-slavery statements from the Declaration of Independence. And then from there, you ended up with conflict between northern states and southern states. And then the parties became the Democrats and the Republicans, which ultimately formed basically the Democratic Party existed. They were the Democratic Republicans. But then the Civil War starts. We've basically never left the Civil War. If you really look at the policies, the conflict, the political divisions and the parties, it's like
You mean in terms of parties, not in terms of regions, though, right?
What I mean, no, this is not meant to be some profound statement. It's basically just everything is derivative of something. You know what I mean? When they're like, oh, it all started here in 2008. It's like 2000. And you go back to Clinton. Then why did Clinton get elected? Why did, you know, Reagan get elected?
And remember Clinton, and this is something that I think a lot of people miss when they talk about Clinton. He was a Southern governor.
That's right.
Right. Arkansas.
Yep.
Right. And now Hillary, remember, well, I don't have to move down to Little Rock, you know. you know, but that he was he was seen as, and, you know, I don't know, people are going to hit me on this for that. He was more of a centrist president, particularly after the 1994 revolution, because Newt Gingrich basically made him be more of a centrist, balanced the budget, pushed for particularly conservative, or so you would say, social conservative issues of the day. Tipper Gore was pro-censorship, you know. Right. She was censoring, remember, parental guidance stickers on all of your CD cases. And you knew if you got the parental guidance one, that was the good one. That was the good version.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one you wanted.
All right.
That was Democrats. That was all Democrats. And Al Gore, Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, I fully agree with this Obama thing. I was thinking this while we were talking about it earlier. I had a lot of friends that were like ready to be radical to overturn this corrupt system in 2007. And then Obama came. We were like, this is the guy. He's going to let us do it. He's not going to stop us.
It wasn't Obama. It was George W. Bush selected.
But when Obama was in, there was a moment where I realized he got co-opted when he was like Trans-Pacific Partnership and other people didn't see it. And those people went on to become now this crazy.
Wasn't there an interview like right when Obama won the Senate seat? He was asked if he was going to run for president and he was like, you know, maybe or something like that.
Yeah.
With 2000, there was a split in the country fairly evenly. W. Bush won. Half the country said this is BS. Bush got us involved in a bunch of wars. And then they were like, Obama is that revolution. And then
Al Gore would have got us involved in the exact same.
Oh, of course.
Exact same. I always laugh when people say, oh, Bush would not. Al Gore would
it's
have
the machine,
done
the
you don't think it was Cheney? You think it was bigger, deeper?
I think it was way.
It's the machine,
way,
bro.
Right. You can't. It's tempting to want to try to pin this on like one person, But it's not, right? These are power, the Uniparty. These are power machines. These are power machines.
All right. Aaron says, Jack, you convey what's happening so simply, the value of that cannot be overstated. I just dropped a podcast on how the left is dividing us in two separate nations with separate flags and anthems. Can I get a shout out for Into the Fray podcast? Hey, there you go, buddy.
I completely agree. You know, the flags situation is that's a direct blow, right? You can now go, and when you see houses and they have an American flag, there is a greater chance that that will be a Republican, or at least a veteran who's in that house, right? And then having other flags, other anthems, right? These are huge problems, right, when it comes to national cohesion.
Absolutely.
Right? It would not even have been considered when I was growing up in the 90s. It was beyond the pale to even
we're there, baby,
of such a thing.
All right. Milkreet says, hey, Tim, any chance of getting Larry Elder or Tiffany Meyer on the show? Also, what would you rate the Epoch Times and NTD News credibility wise? Not super familiar with, I've read a decent amount of Epoch, is it Epoch Times?
Epoch,
and
I think so.
Epoch?
Mm-hmm. Sure. It's They've not been. Epic. That's how you spell Epic for like the epics of history.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Epic because there's a commercial where they themselves call it Epoch Times.
I see Epoch.
Yeah. The articles I read from them have been fairly good, but I know NewsGuard says they're fake news, but not that NewsGuard is the end-all be-all. The articles I've seen from them have actually been pretty decent.
I've been reading, so when I lived in China all those years ago, it was about 15 years, and I would say, like, I want to learn more about the CCP, I want to learn more about, just from a historical standpoint, right? And I'd go to Chinese sources, and it would all be pro-CCP. And then I would say, all right, well, let me read some Western newspapers and see what they're talking about. And that was all pro-CCP. And I was digging around. So there's got to be somebody who's just talking about, like, where's all that stuff I learned about in history class? Where's the massacres of Chairman Mao and the Great Leap Forward and all these other things? Epoch Times.
Yeah.
I found them 15 years ago, and I was reading them and saying, yeah, like, they were the only ones who were actually just telling the truth.
Interesting.
All right. Lamer says, the scariest thing about societal collapse is that there is no coming back. There are no energy sources that can fuel an industrial civilization that can be reached without modern technology. We fall and we don't get back up. I don't necessarily agree. I think typically what you see with societal collapse is that many of the knowledge persists, and I'll put it blunt. After the Black Plague, when most of the population got wiped out, the knowledge of the technology they had remained, and they were able to then implement that, and then they flourished, and there was a renaissance and things like that.
Although the Romans, when the empire fell apart, a lot of that technology was lost. A lot of, like, how to build aqueducts and sewage and all
the
that.
The underwater cement.
And we had, like, the Dark Ages came
I was
upon
actually,
us.
I was at this, this sort of, like, off-the-book summit recently with, some pretty high-level people, and this one guy, he said, you know, looking at things the way I look at things, is it's kind of interesting where it seems like all the people who are in power now, like, it's like they've been handed the keys but not the instruction manual.
Yeah.
And the instruction or the memo, like, you're supposed, like, each generation is supposed to write a memo to the next generation, or that sort of history of, like, presidents writing letters to their successors, or in, like, National Treasure they have the president's book. You remember, that's like a big, like, the secrets of the country. But it's almost like the memo got lost, and so the people who are in control now just have no clue what they're doing. They've lost.
Right.
They've lost the memo. The memo, yep, got lost somewhere.
I think it's because we're putting people in power by popularity contests. We're getting a bunch of idiots in power.
No, it's
just because people like them.
Yeah, but it's an elite club who's able to run. You know,
right. But I mean, that's there's the politicians, and then there's the people in power.
Oh, yeah. Chris Adkins says, I have to know, how do you feel about Crowder's Change My Mind? I have never once seen him demand that someone sit down, only willing participants. It's an excellent show. It's very smart. I think he originally called it Real Conversations.
Great meme. Just great, then, hands down, great,
yeah,
meme.
Yeah.
Total breakout meme. Love it.
I wanted to do something, and I think we will, something akin to, like, Real Conversations. The goal is to interview regular people out in these different cities, not to change their minds or ours, but to literally be like, what do you think about these things? And then just show, like, find someone who's conservative, like, left, right, and independent, and then just have them, like, generally talk and do a podcast where it's like, so how do you feel about this? Wow, interesting. How do you feel about that? And just kind of keep it real, keep it raw.
I'd love to do that, but maybe, you know, and then at the end I'm like, okay, but did you realize that the one that you picked was a MyPillow? It was more comfortable.
All right. Hexmayer says, hey, Tim, ham radio operator here. Cuba is actively jamming the 40-meter frequency band right now. Not only did they kill the internet, but actively affecting worldwide communications to stop info. What?
not crazy.
Yeah, my dad was a big CB guy growing up, and so you know he always showed us how to do that. We had the big antenna on the roof, and then it back then it was like, hey, I'm talking to a guy in Norway, I'm talking to a guy in Jamaica, you know, and be able to, and that idea of you can be able to get a whole, I'm driving around, you know, truckers and stuff like that, but the idea of being able to, like, he instilled in me that the importance of being able to have communications and have that network, that, and radio is just out there, right? It's not something that anyone can, unless you jam it, right? If you have state, you'd need state power to be able to do something like that.
Yep.
But for the most part, and you can go do another channel, but you have to get everyone on that channel to find it. But it's that idea of, you know, in any societal collapse type situation, that these are the types of communication. My dad was actually a Y2K guy.
We were looking at getting a Y2K guy. Like a ham radio or like a shortwave radio or something. But I was looking at them. There's a huge array of them cost wise too, up to like 20 grand. You can see these massive. Do you have any experience? Do you think, or if anyone out there knows and wants to give me some advice on Twitter, which one should I get? Because we could like encode what our frequency band is, you know, if it really hits the fan.
I will talk to my dad and we'll set it up.
All right, everybody, thanks for hanging out. Smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at TimCastIRL. We got deleted from TikTok briefly. All our videos were deleted.
Yep.
And then I tweeted, LOL, TikTok deleted all our videos. And then a few minutes later, after tweeting it, they put them all back up.
Woman, Feitan Baosian, Guan Yu, Ni Man Da TikTok, Ta Men Guan Xi, Jiu Shi Bu Tai Hao Da, Dui Bu Qi, Dui Ni Man Tin Pu, Li Dia Yan.
Seconded. What did you say? Yeah,
we're so sorry.
Thank you for the apology.
And then all of a sudden, it just reappeared after I tweeted about it. I wonder if what really, I don't know. I don't know what happened. I really don't.
Correlation is not causation.
All the videos are just gone.
The videos are gone or the account was gone?
No, the account was there. All the videos were gone.
Wow.
And then I tweeted about it. And then a few minutes or after that, like a half an hour, just they all came back.
Could have been a bug. Never know.
No.
Just a glitch, Mr. Poole. They were gone for a few hours.
When another account we had tried to test upload similar content, it was also removed. Yep.
And other content on the site was available still?
I think because I tweeted about it and it created a stink and people started saying, woo, and, you know, some people were like, we're going to write about it, we'll see what happens. Then all of a sudden it comes back.
They said what? They said woo?
They said woo. Yeah. Anyway, follow,
write that down.
Follow me at TimCast. Yeah, people are like, why are you on TikTok? Because we go where the culture war is happening.
Yeah.
It's like, if there's a culture war happening, we'll send the message. It's kind of interesting when people are like, yeah, but, you know, TikTok is Chinese. Like, why would you, or it's China. Like, why would you want to go? It's the Communist Party on that platform. I'm like, if we have people in China who are pro-freedom or Hong Kong, don't we want to send them messages and let them know what's happening?
Guess who's listening to you on Google? And iPhone,
yeah, I know,
and
right?
Everything else. It's like, so, okay, look, the CIA gets you here, MSS gets you there.
But we're just trying to make sure that we're not going to be like, I refuse to engage in this area because it's controlled by this group. Well, no. Let's flood the zone with smack talking the Chinese Communist Party. That's fantastic.
Yes.
So anyway, follow me personally at TimCast. And of course, we do the show Monday through Friday live. We're gonna have a bonus segment up at TimCast.com. So go become a member. You want to shout anything out, Jack?
Yeah. You know, I plugged MyPillow a whole bunch. We actually are doing some. we actually do have a page up. So MyPillow.com/Poso. We're gonna be putting just exclusive deals up there. One cool thing, I actually got my son. It's Bible stories. So if you're someone who's Christian, it's just Bible stories for kids. It's like a little pillow. We got him Jesus. There's like Noah, Daniel, the lion. Just a bunch of cool different things. And then for all latest news, updates, etc., it's humanevents.com. Ton of stuff coming out. Working on a scoop that I can't get into too much right now. I was like halfway done it. So I think I'm probably going to finish it in the morning. But it has to do with the Department of Justice and inner city crime and what they are teaching people from the highest levels of the DOJ and the White House about this.
Right on.
Well, times may be confusing, but we can do this together as humans. We're extremely innovative. Technology is at our fingertips, so let's use it. And if you want to get a piece of obsidian, I highly recommend it. It's not like any other stone I've ever held in my hand. I really like it.
But you know, in Game of Thrones, obsidian is like the main mystical.
Really?
You know, it's what kills the White Walkers and the others.
But they don't call it obsidian.
They call it dragon glass.
Yeah, right.
Dragon glass.
Love it. So get your piece of dragon glass.
Follow me
at Ian Crossland. Love.
You guys may follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Lids as I attempt to have more followers than Sour Patch Kids. I just want to say to all you people questioning why we're on places like YouTube and TikTok, we are there because we're attempting to draw people to our site, which is our attempt to combat on the culture wars like playing field,
yep,
to get them off those sites and to get into our own site. But yeah, you guys are welcome to follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Lids.
Jesus said, go where the sinners are.
That's right.
We will see all of you at timcast.com. Thanks for hanging out.